Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to be talking with Stephen Lacey, a writer, blogger over at Climate Progress, about this whole solar thing. The hearings, the attacks, the right wing trying to destroy alternative energy. Is this industry viable? Is it something we should be moving forward on? I believe it absolutely is. I believe there are tens of thousands of jobs. I believe this is a way for us to get off the oil and to become energy independent, which is why I think our friends on the extreme right hate it so much. So we're going to talk to him about that. Also, Pennsylvania Senator, State Senator Dalen Leach is going to be here talking about this whole scheme going on by the governor and Dominic Pileggi trying to change the whole way that we elect the president in the state. I guess really kind of making this state irrelevant. I mean, if we go to this plan, I don't think you'll ever see another presidential candidate come to the state of Pennsylvania. You won't need to. They will have rigged this state up to where it'll be a 12-6 Republican state, and you will never see anyone come here again, and we will be completely, completely out of the presidential election, start to finish. So we'll talk to Dalen Leach about that. Also in the third hour, Brian Corliss, communications representative with the Machinist Union, District Lodge 751 out in Washington State. The bill passed today in the House. The Republicans rammed through their Protecting Boeing from Breaking from the Law Act. Eight Democrats joined the Republicans. Seven Republicans joined the Democrats. Again, to me, it's just amazing. But you do have, like Mike Ross, the Walmart representative. He voted for taking the NLRB's power away, and it's just mind boggling. So I watched a good portion of the hearings today, and the testimony, and all of the debate on the floor, I guess. And I, as I'm watching the Republicans make their arguments, I came to the conclusion that they want no law whatsoever protecting workers whatsoever. They want business to be able to do whatever it is business wants to do, be it with workers, be it with the environment, be it with taxes, that somehow that these wonderful people, because, of course, as you know, thanks to Mitt Romney and the Supreme Court, corporations are now people, that these people should be able to do to the rest of us whatever it is that they'd like. So get rid of all those safety rules, get rid of all those protections, minimum wage, get rid of it all. Take it all away. And let business do whatever it is that business wants to do. That seems to be their shtick. Personally, I think it's a dumb idea. I think it's trouble. I think we will end up like a third world country. But, maybe we have to do this. And as I said back when the big recession hit, when the Bush collapse happened, maybe this is that moment when people start feeling pain. real, real pain. I mean, there are people suffering right now. But we're helping buoy them up with unemployment and with food stamps and making sure that, you know, we get some help out where we can. Maybe all that stuff gets stripped away and we have a complete collapse like Pat Toomey would want us to have. A harder down, as he called it. Maybe that bounce off the pavement would rattle something inside the non-working skull. I don't know. Maybe. And maybe we should start with our president. I think James Carville is right, though. I don't know if you saw his piece. I think he needs to go in and fire a whole bunch of people. He needs to go in and clean house. You know, not too long ago we had a guest say, you know, the president's criminal because no one's left his cabinet. And, you know, the more I think about that, I disagree. Nobody's left his cabinet because they haven't gotten themselves into any trouble. They haven't committed any crimes yet. But I think there needs to be some fresh blood. There needs to be somebody who's going to tell this guy, buddy, do something. Be, as Carville says, be a Democrat. Make the cases like a Democrat. Stop having wonks out there pushing your message. Like the Congressional Budget Office director, that Douglas Elmendorf, he's making their case. Oh, well, you know, we can't slow the economy because, and then blah, 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 a whole bunch of wonk. You've got to get out there and actually make a passionate plea. Say, we can't cut spending on social programs. That's going to hurt people. And give examples. These folks need help. Instead of all this wonkish academia, get out behind that. Roll your sleeves up. Get out and what he's doing this week. And you got to give him credit. I think he's doing the right thing. And then, you know, pick an explanation. Pick an idea and stick with it. Don't cave. Stop the caving. I mean, that's been something that Democrats have been saddled with. Take your position. Like this jobs bill. He's out there running around now saying, pass my jobs bill. If you love me, pass my jobs bill. When everybody knows next week he's going to cave on it. Because have they introduced it? No. Do you know what the Jobs Bill for America is, or the American Jobs Bill, or whatever he's calling it? Do you know what that actually officially is? In the House of Representatives, it's a bill to repeal the corporate income tax. They haven't even taken his bill, and this is what ticks me off about Democrats. They haven't even taken the guy's bill and put it into the House yet. But the thing is, man, you got to stop with the caving. And you've got to pick a plan. Pick a plan and stick with it. You know, the Republicans are masters at that. How many times have we heard them, we need more tax cuts. We need more corporate tax cuts. We need more deregulations. It's a failure. Fail, 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 fail. They must have seen the billboard on the highway one day and said, eventually, something's got to work for us. We're just going to stick with it until it eventually works. The Congressional Progressive Caucus today had a conference call. And again, rebuild this country. Rebuild the American dream. And they had a couple of really good ideas, stuff that we've talked about on the program quite often. Make it here. Part of a congressional plan. I don't hear the Republicans talking about this. I hear the Republicans saying, let the job creators do whatever they want. Let the business do whatever they want. Because we shouldn't be able to tell the job creators where they go to create the jobs. No, we shouldn't be able to do that. So if they want to go to China, that's where they can go. So we got to start making stuff here. And that starts with trade policies. And we've talked about this ad nauseum. Our trade policies are screwing us daily. And you know what? Maybe rebuild this country. We've spent an awful lot of money rebuilding Iraq. We've spent a whole bunch of money rebuilding Afghanistan. We've spent money building everybody except us. Invest here. Sounds like a great idea, doesn't it? Maybe we should try it. Maybe we should start looking down the road instead of saying, right now I want tax dollars in my pocket. I'm going to be short-sighted. Maybe start creating jobs for the kids coming out of college. And a good place to start is these green jobs. A great place to start are solar panels, wind, geothermal, all of the stuff that we haven't really invested in. We've dabbled in it. We've thrown a couple of bucks at it. But not like the Chinese, not like the Germans, who are down that path and beating us. So right now, three companies went bankrupt. This is the Republican mindset. Three companies out of 100, I guess, at this point. Three of them have gone bankrupt. Their idea now is, well, obviously it didn't work. Those three didn't. Let's just throw up our hands and be done with it. Let the Chinese have it. That's the idea. And you look at what's going on today. This whole thing about we need to restrict what workers can do and completely release the reins on employers. And the Congressional Progressive Caucus says, look, you know, we need to make those jobs. We need to create jobs here, but they got to be good jobs. And you got to give people the right to collectively bargain. You got to give people the right to organize. While all of the attacks are going against workers, against collective bargaining, against organizing, the Progressive Caucus is saying, look, no, that's the wrong way. We've been down this road. We've seen this movie. It ends poorly. And they also say, you know what? We need a fair tax system. We need something that's going to say, you know what? The bigger your shoulders, the more water you can carry. The more of society that you should help move along. You know, I often sit and I wonder, what if we spent as much money on solar, as much money on geothermal and wind technology as we have spent on oil and natural gas over the years? What if we invested that kind of money for as long? I mean, stop and think of how long we've been giving the BPs and the Exxons and all of these big multinational companies, how much money we've been giving them, the billions and billions of dollars we've been handing out. What if we were to do that to say, oh, I don't know, something like solar here at home, build those panels here, put them on government buildings just to start. And then the ones that fall off the truck, you know, maybe you use them in a park or something. Now you got Bill Gates who's saying, you know what, slow down. He was on Capitol Hill on Tuesday and he said, you know, slow down. The U.S. needs to take a far more muscular role in expanding innovation. And he's come up with this American Energy Innovation .org, American Innovation think tank, American Energy Innovation .org is their website. And we're going to talk about this a little bit today. But, you know, these are people who buy into it. They get it. They understand that solar, wind, all that stuff, that's the future. And we need to invest heavily in it. And they talk about the fact that look at all of the industries that could not have existed without government funding. And part of their plan is, you know what, $16-18 billion a year just in energy policy, just to get money into creating solar panels, creating wind turbines, doing all that stuff. And you know where they say to get it? Now these are CEOs and these aren't your lefties, these aren't progressives, these aren't Democrats. These are CEOs of major companies saying, look, we need to take that money from the oil and gas revenues. They're mature industries. They can stand on their own. We need to help those fledgling industries that are just starting out, that are the future. We want to move away from oil and natural gas. We need to start the companies today that are going to do it, maybe by levying a fee on electricity. Oh, don't do that. Maybe levying a fee on gasoline. Oh, don't want to do that. But these are the billionaires. These are the big thinkers, if you will, the Gateses of the world, saying, look, you know, you've got to innovate, and you've got to put money into new technology. And he talks about the medical sector. He talks about the IT. He talks about healthcare. Without government R&D money, none of that stuff moves ahead. We're nowhere near where we are today without government investment. So instead of thinking about, oh, we're going to cut some of that speculative stuff, he's saying, no, look at that as an investment. That's the future. That's what we need to be focused on. We need to be looking at how do we get these industries to grow and to create the jobs that the oil and natural gas industry has. And I think the guy's right. Because private industry doesn't take risks. They don't do things for the benefit of society. They do things for the benefit of themselves. And that's the bottom line, folks. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Stephen Lacey from Climate Project. Climate Progress, right back after this.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. If the Medicaid program is slashed by hundreds of billions of dollars, as a House Republican plan would do, millions of low-income senior citizens and disabled people will lose their last health care lifeline. Families USA Director Ron Pollack.
It would have cut from the existing program $771 billion over the next 10 years. It would have eliminated the expansion of coverage that's in the Affordable Care Act. And so it is clear that many millions of people who now consider Medicaid their lifeline would lose that coverage.
Pollack says America has the resources to expand rather than cut Medicaid, but political decisions are being made to inflict more pain on the poor, elderly, and disabled rather than require wealthy people and corporations to pay their fair shares to sustain programs like Medicaid. And Pollack says it's not just poor families with children who will be without that health care lifeline should Medicaid be slashed.
If we slash Medicaid, this is not just going to cut coverage for families with children. It's going to force grandma out of a nursing home. It's going to prevent grandma from getting care at home or in the community. And that's going to have a real adverse impact on families across the country.
The UAW is continuing labor contract talks with the Detroit 3 automakers. If talks break down with no agreement, the GM and Chrysler contracts will be decided by binding arbitration. Ford workers are the only Detroit 3 UAW workers who preserved a right to strike should no agreement be reached. UAW workers at the three U.S. automakers have given up thousands of dollars a year in concessions and are looking for improvements in their contracts with the now profitable automakers. A new study suggests that using private contractors is more costly for the government. Jesse Russell reports.
A study released this week by the Project on Government Oversight suggests that it costs taxpayers more when the government uses private contractors. Analyzing billing rates of over 35 occupational classifications showed that in 33 of those classifications, using federal employees was less costly. One of the key findings showed that in all 35 classifications, the contractor billing rates were higher than what's considered standard in the private sector. In one case, Pogo discovered that the contractor billed five times more than the compensation that would have been paid to federal employees for the same work. The study suggests that if the government continues to contract out services, it needs to do a better job at reaching the fair market value instead of letting itself be bilked for excessive costs. The organization is pushing Congress to adopt better transparency standards.
This newscast made possible in part by ULICO, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company, and by OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So the Republicans are, you know, they're all a Twitter. I mean, they're all tingly in the panties. We've had three solar companies file bankruptcy, so they're willing to throw up their hands and say, oh, see, we told you it wasn't going to work. We need to drill, baby, drill. That's what we need to do, except in Florida. Because if you remember earlier in the week, we talked about when Michelle Bachmann said that she, as president, would want to drill in the Everglades, and Alan West said he'd straighten her right out. I wonder if he straightened her out yet. I don't know how you can straighten somebody out who's not really in touch with reality, but it's a whole nother discussion for a whole nother day. So anyway, here to help talk a little bit about this solar thing is Stephen Lacey. He's a reporter, blogger over at Climate Progress. Stephen, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Good to be here.
I appreciate it. I know you got to be tired of talking about Solyndra, so we won't talk much about it. One of three companies recently that have gone bankrupt. How many other companies are out there doing this that our tax dollars have helped in one way or another, do you think?
There are a number of companies out there, and the solar industry is thriving right now, especially on the installation side. So on a basic level, we have investment tax credits, a Treasury grant program that was created through the stimulus package that has enabled the solar industry to boom in the last couple of years, despite the dire financial crisis that we face and the economic slowdown. What you're seeing is we're having some troubles in manufacturing because of competition with very low-cost loans from China, which is subsidizing a number of large solar manufacturers. And that has played a big role in impacting the competitiveness of some of the U.S. manufacturers here. But altogether, you know, we this Solyndra debacle, you know, people are really focusing on this one company and a couple of companies that have gone belly up. But really what we're seeing is quite a booming industry here in the U.S.
That could, you know, they're creating tens of thousands of jobs, and the future of this, you know, is really very bright, if you will. The one thing that I think that most people don't realize is the Solyndra thing, and I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to blame Bush, because, you know, if he was behind trying to get some of this moving, I'm something maybe I like about George W. Bush, I don't know. But I guess this whole Solyndra thing started under his administration, correct?
Yes, the original loan guarantee program, which is the incentive that was provided to Solyndra, which essentially backs a loan in case of default. So they're actually not giving the money to the company unless something seriously bad happens, like a bankruptcy in Solyndra's case. And what that does is enable private financing to come in, and it's a great tool for stimulating a lot of investment.
Right.
Now, the Bush administration recognized this. This is a bipartisan effort to put this program forward for the renewable energy industry and for a number of people who supported nuclear, because it was very difficult to get nuclear facilities built. So this was a bipartisan effort, and the Bush administration was trying to push this loan guarantee through to show that it had done something for renewable energy. And so they put this loan forward to a credit committee to review this, and the credit committee said, sorry, you're pushing this too fast. We need more information. That didn't mean they said it was a bad loan. They just said, this is too soon to do this. So there are a couple stories playing out. One is that the Bush administration did have something to do with this, and it was a bipartisan effort. Both administrations sort of had a say in this loan. And the second is that this credit committee enabled the project to go forward when they deemed that there was enough information and market research on the company.
Right.
So that when it finally did go through the Obama administration, they approved it and said that the due diligence had been done.
Did they push? I mean, there's a lot of talk that the White House kind of pushed on this, maybe a little too, so that they could have their photo op. Any validity to that, do you think?
Well, I think we have not seen all the emails come out.
Okay.
So I don't think anyone is ready to make any conclusion yet. The GOP is sitting on tens of thousands of documents, tens of thousands of pages of documents. They've released a few emails here and there. But what we have seen so far is that these emails are not very damning. What we heard at the hearing the other day, the House Energy and Commerce Committee held a hearing, grilled some of the folks one guy at DOE at the Department of Energy and one guy at the Office of Management and Budget, and asked them, why was this process set up? And the answer was, well, the loan had already closed. What they were doing was trying to establish some final formalities so that they could publicly announce the loan before this groundbreaking event. So we're seeing that there was some talk about speeding up the process, but it was not to close the actual loan. It was to wrap up some of the financial formalities. And I think there's a major distinction to be made there, and
yes,
Unfortunately in the coverage, people are not talking about that.
Well, I mean, I think what's going on is you've got very big moneyed interest who want to declare solar dead, and they want to drill, baby, drill.
I think that's exactly it. And we have seen a concerted push not just to tear down the solar industry, but the renewable energy industry broadly. This is a sector that has historically enjoyed bipartisan support. And I think when you talk to people privately, they support the clean energy industry. But you see a lot of pressure from the Tea Party not to support these efforts. They think that any government involvement in these sectors should be stripped away. And, you know, what we have to ask ourselves as a country is, do we deem these industries of strategic importance? And countries all across the world are saying that these are the most important industries of the future, and they want to provide the level of support to get these industries off the ground.
Yep.
And the entrenched fossil fuel interests clearly have an interest in not seeing this move forward as rapidly as it could.
Yeah, because
they have a lot of dynamics at play there at the same time.
Yeah, they don't know how to profit off of it. You're listening to The Rich Smith Show here with Stephen Lacey, reporter, blogger for Climate Progress. You know, one of my ideas, Stephen, has always been, instead of giving loan guarantees, instead of giving loans or any of that, to just, you know, buy stuff. I mean, the federal government buys an awful lot of stuff. They've got an awful lot of buildings. When it comes to solar panels, you know, you could say, look, we're going to put solar panels on every military installation, every federal building. This is what we're going to pay. Who's going to provide them? And I think that would draw private capital in, because then you'd have the entrepreneurs going out there saying, we've got demand. How do we best serve that demand?
Well, it's interesting because you are starting to see the military do this. The Navy just signed a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Energy and the Department of Agriculture to invest hundreds of millions of dollars in biorefineries, because the Navy needs homegrown domestic biofuels. Every time the price of gasoline goes up by cents, its gasoline budget increases by tens of millions of dollars. I mean, it's incredible.
Yep.
So they are so vulnerable to significant price shocks. And they are not only helping develop biofuel refineries, but also installing a number of small wind projects and solar projects on facilities around the country. This is not a massive effort, but it is pretty substantial. But I think ultimately you need a mix of all of these things. You know, none of these tools in and of themselves will be the answer. We need a suite of incentives that are efficient and help deploy private capital. Clearly, we don't want the government to just prop up the industry and keep it going. I mean, but this is an industry where private capital is waiting on the sidelines, ready to, actually, I shouldn't even say waiting on the sidelines, where plenty of private capital is coming in. But what we're saying is there are specific tools that need to be in place, like basic tax credits, like the loan guarantee program, which says that it will help risky technologies that are on the verge of commercialization but might need a little bit of extra backing to deploy large-scale private capital to bring them to commercial scale. These are all really important tools that governments have used time immemorial to support industries of strategic value. So I think it's a suite of tools that we need to see in place.
No, I agree. And, you know, I read a quote by Bill Gates, who is part of this American Energy Innovation Council. I don't know if you've seen this, but in one report, his comment was, there is a need for government to be involved in funding research. We've seen this in the medical sector, the IT sector. The benefits to society of research are broad enough that if you just count on the private sector alone, you will have very dramatic underinvestment. And I think he's hit something really on the head here, that a lot of these industries like solar, like the IT as he pointed out, would have never gotten done if we had to rely solely on the private sector. So isn't the bigger question here, because we keep hearing that the federal government shouldn't be doing this and we need the private sector, we need to unleash the private sector. Isn't the bigger question is talking about what role government has?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the sad part of this is that someone like Bill Gates was in Washington spreading this message, and the Solyndra debacle completely wiped out his messaging. Someone this powerful, who clearly understands how industries evolve between government and the private sector. It had his message canceled out by a political circus, a sideshow that was being created to try to tear down these industries. So I completely agree. I think throughout history you have seen government play a role in developing railroads, in helping develop the oil and gas industries, in helping develop the aeronautical industry. It's, you know, helping develop the internet. You can basically name any major industry that we take for granted today. The government has had a pretty serious role in helping develop at an early stage.
And, you know, I always bring that back. It's not just the government. It's you and me. It's all of us. It's our government. We are investing in these things because we are investing in our future collectively. You know, when I hear my T-twits go on about, well, the government, and that, you know, that, like it's some evil entity to be divorced from, I say, well, you know, what about all these things that were brought to us? And I brought up the computer, and I've had someone say, well, you know, they started HP, Hewlett-Packard, in a one-car garage, like it was just yesterday. I said,
yeah,
that was back in the 1930s they did that.
Well, we like to tell ourselves stories that, you know, the lone entrepreneur who somehow starts an industry on their own. And those are very compelling stories. But, you know, time and time again, there has been some level of government support. Now, I'll be clear here. I mean, I think everyone who believes that government has some role wants to see this done in an efficient way and in a transparent way.
Yep.
Want to see our tax dollars spent in the best way possible. And that's why this Solyndra hearing, you know, we have to wait to see what comes out of this with regard to the process. But the idea that they're turning this into an indictment of clean energy generally and the government's role in developing these programs is completely silly. And again, it's political theater to try to turn something that we should all be learning lessons from into, an ideological lesson that they want to teach.
Yeah, and again, it's just taking us backwards. Because for me, I gotta be honest, we get our energy from places that are very unstable. And that is no way for a superpower, to have to survive.
Absolutely not. And, you know, unfortunately, it has just gotten worse over time. And, we need to start thinking about some serious alternatives. And we have delayed for decades. Other countries have continued supporting these sectors. And now, you know, the Europeans and the Asians boast some of the biggest companies in the game, in the wind, the bioenergy, solar industries. So we are, you know, we're really slipping away here. And this is a multi-decade race that is already being won by other countries who are far ahead of the U.S. in this game.
Last question I've got for you. You know, you said it's a multi-decade thing. I see this as the Republicans are declaring victory and they're going to kill it off. And 2012 could be 1980 all over again. Because when Carter was president, we had a lot of these policies. You know, I stop and think about this. 1979, we're talking about putting solar panels on people's houses, and they did a lot of it. The second Ronald Reagan came in, all that stopped, and we lost an entire generation of opportunity to get off of the oil and to get away from places that hate us.
Absolutely. And I think that is something that people should wake up and pay attention to. If we are using this to stop short-term political support in order to claim some sort of gain, we have lost the battle and we have lost the war. This is something that most developed countries clearly see as an important piece of economic development and national security enhancement. And the fact that the U.S. still can't wrap our heads around this, that the U.S. politicians can't wrap their heads around this, and that we see this as a game is very sad and should be a wake-up call.
I agree with you. Stephen Lacy, I appreciate the time. Reporter, blogger for Climate Progress. Thanks so much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me on. You bet.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What are your thoughts? Solar power, yes, no? I love my panels. Back after this.
Oh.
where working people come to talk.
Fellow working class heroes, I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
In the infamous Enron scandals of a decade ago, unregulated energy hucksters created an array of dummy financial funds so they could evade public scrutiny and perpetrate fraud. To disguise the scams, the funds were given such names as Chuco and Jedi. While Enron's house of cards collapsed, Enron Accounting not only continues in corporate America today, it's also infesting an endeavor that should never be tainted with such financial gimmickry, America's democracy. Corporate hucksters, intent on political profiteering, are setting up dummy funds with such star-spangled names as Make Us Great Again and Restore Our Future. These are super PACs created to amass millions of dollars in unrestricted corporate cash to back the candidacies of particular presidential wannabes. These groups can raise and spend unlimited amounts of money, something the candidates themselves are barred from doing. Already, the dummy funds are becoming larger than the candidates' own campaigns, allowing a few big-money interests to pervert our democratic process into their plutocratic plaything. How few? As of August, more than 80% of the money in super PACs backing Republican candidates has come from only 35 people writing six- and seven-figure checks. Technically, these dummy groups must not coordinate their actions with the candidates they back, but this ban is a fraud. For example, Rick Perry's Make Us Great Again PAC is headed by a corporate lobbyist who had been Perry's chief of staff and is now both a major fundraiser and political advisor for Perry. Hello? The front group, the lobbyist, the fundraiser, and the advisor don't have to coordinate. They're all the same person. This is Jim Hightower saying, what these super PACs represent is the Enronization of our politics. It's a legalized corruption that's tantamount to a corporate takeover.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
What they do, they smile in your face.
You what? If you were watching some of these hearings on this Solyndra, man, the Republicans, they got no problem pulling the knife out and jabbing you in the back. This to them, this whole alternative energy thing is dead to them. And they want to take us back to the good old days where drill baby drill was the way to go and keep getting our oil from overseas, keep being dependent. Me, I gotta be honest, for years I've been saying what we need smart policies that are gonna encourage people to have energy independent homes. Every home in this country should have a geothermal system to help heat their house and solar panels to help with the electricity. You know, we're gonna have to spend billions and billions of dollars upgrading our electrical grid. Or you know what happened in Ohio and Pennsylvania and New York a couple of years ago where they didn't have power for quite some time? That could become the norm. Or we could have the Enron-style rolling blackouts. You know, more of that. I guess the choice is up to you. And this next election, to me, is 1980 all over again. Do we go back to the drill baby drill? And Bachman has come out and said, look, we'll drill in the Everglades. Yeah, right there. What the heck? And got Corbett saying, why don't we just drill for natural gas right on college campuses, right next to the cafeteria. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, I look at this, Jake, and I got to be honest. It seems like common sense to me, but the Republicans, they never let a good crisis go to waste. They never let something that collapses go to waste.
It's not just about dollars and cents. Let's go back to your buddy, Jimmy Carter, 1976. He advocated the United States government to start investing in substantially in solar energy. And let's say we would have. Let's say we would have, and he would have won in 1980. Ronald Reagan wouldn't have reversed those policies. It's a good question to ask us as U.S. citizens. Would we have gone to war in the year 2003? Let's be honest. It wasn't about weapons of mass destruction. It was about protecting our oil supply. But if we, in fact, didn't need that oil supply for our own energy needs, would we have gone to war? Yeah. Probably not.
Yeah, I go back to the Carter quotes that I remember, and I remember it as a kid.
Energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
Well, we know what happened. 1980, Ronald Reagan becomes president, and every year since, we've used more oil than we have the year before, and more and more and more and more. We are filling ourselves up. And he is right. We don't have an energy policy, which is one of the very first things that the Gates people are saying. Look, you need to have an energy policy. You need to have an idea of what you're going to do. You've got to do something that helps aid in innovation and significant innovation, something that's going to benefit the public in a quantifiable way, and not something that we're waiting and hoping that, oh, T. Boone Pickens is going to do something because he's figured out how to profit from it. Look, you need T. Boone Pickens' money. You need the capital investments. You do. But at the end of the day, he's not going to do it because it's speculative. He could lose his hat. We need an energy policy that's going to say, you know what, we're going to make sure that we have solar banks.
Moreover, I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
Now here we are, 2011. We're not getting 20%. You know, if we were getting 20%, and what's amazing to me, if we were, we wouldn't need the Middle East. And to me, strategically, listening to Carter, former admiral, Navy, I don't think he was an admiral. What was he? I'll have to look that up. But he was a career Navy man. Strategically, do away with them. 20%, that's what we were getting. We wouldn't need them. We could cut them right out. And they invested in the technology. And then came Reagan again, you know, it all went away. And now here we are, years later, generation later, doing the exact same thing over again, investing very little money, because they didn't invest a lot of money back in the 70s into this. They invested enough to get it going a little bit, just like we're doing now. Just enough to pique the interest, just enough to get it rolling just a little bit before the Republicans can come in and stomp it out.
So Leo Gerard last night on national TV, and they asked him, well, what's the difference between Germany, whose economy is booming, and the United States? He said two things. He said, one, they have an energy policy, and two, they have a jobs program. And they've invested heavily, and they're bearing the fruits of their intelligent investments. Two things which we don't have, which we sorely need in this country.
See, now Gates, you know, his organization here, with all the CEOs, they've got their interests in mind. And that's fueling their businesses, that's making a profit, and understand that right up. So he's no grand hero, but he's at least somebody who's willing to say, you know what, we've got to think of things a little bit differently, and we need an energy policy, and we need to invest. Because he's right, healthcare, military, IT, all of that stuff. Government money, government research, government investment. And they're calling for $16 billion a year to be invested in clean energy innovation. $16 billion a year. They're also calling for the creation of these, what they're calling centers of excellence, these hubs of innovation. You know, we used to call them universities. We probably could still use those, even though we've privatized a good number of it. That's where we used to do a lot of our government-funded innovation. And they're also saying you need to expand this Advanced Research Projects Agency. for energy. They're the people who focus on the high risk, high payoff stuff. The stuff that no private industry is going to jump into, because they just don't see the short term return. This is stuff where you go, you know what? This is planning for the future. And our problem in this country for too long is we think at the tip of our nose. We're not thinking a generation ahead. We're not thinking 100 years ahead. As with the Chinese, they plan. They've got a 100-year plan. I don't know that we have a 100-day plan anymore. I know when Obama came in, presidents usually have their first 100 days mapped out, and then they just wing it after that. But you look at other countries, they think down the road strategically. We're the only ones who seem to buy into this, the invisible man will take care of us. The invisible hand will push us around and guide us through whatever comes up. And look, this solar thing could be a huge boom for this country if only we really, really pushed for it. And I think you talk to anybody who says, you know what? What Carlisle did in their school district, putting that huge solar array up, is going to pay for that district's energy cost for a generation. That's smart policy. It's good investment. And when you talk to people, you, on an individual basis, you get that. But we have this team mentality. My team is right. And the Republicans right now are saying solar's dead. All that clean energy, all of that renewable stuff, it's all dead. We need to drill, baby, drill. Even if it means in your backyard. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseccu.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Got any questions, comments, something on your mind? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. So last weekend, the football season started, and a nice story in San Diego. This woman, she's one of the people who, one of the vendors, one of the people who, while you're sitting in your seats, you know, throwing you peanuts and hot dogs and stuff. This woman, Allison, mother of four, full-time student, she tripped. She fell. The money that she had for the day went flying out into the air, over the edge, all over the place. And do you know the good people of San Diego, the Charger fans there, picked up every last dollar of it and gave it back to her? That is a good story. And something that, you know, that I'm not a Chargers fan. In fact, you know, being a Bronco fan myself, hate the Chargers. But for that, they deserve a pat on the back. And while we're talking about the NFL, it looks like the Washington Redskins, they are installing the largest solar panels in the NFL. They're putting up enough solar panels to decrease their game day energy consumption by 15%. They're going to provide 850 covered parking spaces. They're going to keep somewhere around 1,800 metric tons of carbon out of the atmosphere. Good for them. And I guess it's enough power that they're going to be able to 20% of their game day needs and all of their non-game day needs. So good stuff. Now, here's this: 850 covered spots. That's only, that's going to be your season ticket holders or your loge boxes, since it is Washington. So the congressman won't have to get wet. What if they decided that, you know what, we'd like to have all of our parking people be able to park out of the evil sun? How much could they generate then? Just a thought. And you look around the league. You look at the fact that the Eagles, your Eagles there, they added 2,500 solar panels and 80 20-foot wind turbines. They evidently run the entire stadium on sustainable energy. The Patriots, they put up 2,800 solar panels, complete with solar-powered compactors, so they can recycle their cans and their bottles. Across the NFL, you're seeing smart because you're saving money. And now these are business owners who are going, you know what, we can have our energy free? Let's do that. The Detroit Lions, for instance, they use 20 million pounds of recycled steel. Steel we didn't have to get from the Chinese. Now, understand, we still produce a lot of steel here. The steel workers do that, but understand, China produces 11 times more. And understand, it's crappier. It is what it is. And they paved the entire parking lot at the Lions Stadium with recycled tires. So good for them. Good for them. And that's the kind of stuff that should be happening. You know, it shouldn't be the oh my gosh, they did that. It should be, well, yeah, of course. Of course they did. Makes sense.
Well, and I think it ought to be pointed out, Washington, I believe the owner, Jack Kent-Cote, he used to own it.
Daniel Snyder.
Yeah, but Jack Kent-Cote. Cook was the one who built the stadium. It was his idea. He died, and Snyder took over. The point is that stadium is owned by the Redskins, where in some cities it's owned by the city. So what I'm trying to point out is these owners, it's nice to own a football team, and it's kind of a hobby, but make no mistake, they buy it to make money.
Of course.
So what I'm saying is they know that's not only going to save oil, but it's a good investment.
There you go. I saw this story in USA Today, and it kind of made me stop and go, the headline. I'm just going to read you the headline. Hydration stations sweep colleges to promote tap water. Hydration stations. You mean drinking fountains? You know, when I was a kid, they were called drinking fountains. In fact, they were everywhere. They were in every park. They were near every pool. When I was a kid, drinking fountains were accessible. Now, good luck trying to find one. And to me, one, it's the divestment of we the people in putting drinking fountains, or, I guess we've got to be 21st century, hydration stations. Got to have these hydration stations because, now it's going to be real technical. But when I was a kid, drinking fountains were there. And you know why drinking fountains have gone away? Because we haven't been investing in putting up new ones. And there's been such a great push of selling you water in a nice plastic bottle with a fancy name and a label, and because we think somehow that the bottled water is better than the tap water, even though study after study after study shows tap water is generally better because it's at least regulated. And I know all my right-wing friends, I know, well, I don't want no regulations. I want feces in my water. I like to have amoebas floating around. But, yeah, they're out there. They're touring. The Black Eyed Peas, one of the music group out there promoting these hydration centers, you know, these nice centers for hydration because they don't want more plastic bottles. They want you to take that plastic bottle and refill it at the – and I'm sorry. I can't do the hydration station thing. At the drinking fountain. I mean, isn't that nuts? I mean, really. On a certain level, you got to go, kind of dumb. Hydration station. But again, it comes back down to this idea of investing in our community and investing in the public good. We used to have water fountains. Now we do not. Now we have to buy bottled water for a buck and a half a bottle, where you used to just go, oh, there's a water fountain. I think I'll get a drink of water for free. Mm-hmm.
You go to a sport event, Rick, it'll cost you a lot more than that. Trust me. At least double.
But again, it's this whole push to we need to privatize. We need more private. We need to get government out. And the solar thing to me, again, it's that. And the Republicans, you know, doing the dance, you know, they're all tingly in the panties doing the happy dance that these three companies have gone down tells me that they really are not on the side of we the people and the commons of we the people. It's all about for profit for them. And drinking fountains or hydration stations, as they're now called, just another example of that. And you can go, you know, thing after thing. Because they want us to believe that, you know, it's private industry who will decide. We need to get government out of the way. You know, because all those water fountains were harming private industry. And this belief that, you know, government had no role in helping corporations. You know, I look at the IBM supercomputer Watson. And Watson evidently now is going to be assisting doctors doing some diagnosing and some treating of patients. And you go back and you read the story of IBM, very much tied to government money, very much government researched grants, very much, you know, side by side. We talked about the HP story last night, Hewlett Packard. You know, everybody seems to get, well, you know, they started in a one-car garage. Yeah, back in the 30s, making little light bulb things. And they grew and grew and grew over years. And once they got to the computer age, where do you think they got most of the money from? That's right. From us. Military, mostly. But from us. And the internet? Us. The whole IT thing? Us. And now what we've got is we've got a Republican Party who is hell-bent on taking any investment in the future and giving it to the millionaires and billionaires. Taking any opportunity for the next generation to succeed and prosper and hand it over to the millionaires and billionaires today. And to me, I gotta tell you, way too short-sighted, way too tip of the nose. Which is why I think this election next year is so important. And when we come back in here in a minute, we're going to talk about what Governor Corporate and the Republicans here are trying to do to basically to make Pennsylvania irrelevant and to hand this state over to the Republican Party forever. Because, look, they can't win it fair and square, so you got to cheat it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania State Senator Dalen Leach about this. Stick around.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. If the Medicaid program is slashed by hundreds of billions of dollars, as a House Republican plan would do, millions of low-income senior citizens and disabled people will lose their last health care lifeline. Families USA Director Ron Pollack.
It would have cut from the existing program $771 billion over the next 10 years. It would have eliminated the expansion of coverage that's in the Affordable Care Act, And so it is clear that many millions of people who now consider Medicaid their lifeline would lose that coverage.
Pollack says America has the resources to expand rather than cut Medicaid, but political decisions are being made to inflict more pain on the poor, elderly, and disabled rather than require wealthy people and corporations to pay their fair shares to sustain programs like Medicaid. And Pollack says it's not just poor families with children who will be without that health care lifeline should Medicaid be slashed.
If we slash Medicaid, this is not just going to cut coverage for families with children. It's going to force grandma out of a nursing home. It's going to prevent grandma from getting care at home or in the community. And that's going to have a real adverse impact on families across the country.
The UAW is continuing labor contract talks with the Detroit 3 automakers. If talks break down with no agreement, the GM and Chrysler contracts will be decided by binding arbitration. Ford workers are the only Detroit 3 UAW workers who preserve the right to strike should no agreement be reached. UAW workers at the three U.S. automakers have given up thousands of dollars a year in concessions and are looking for improvements in their contracts with the now profitable automakers. A new study suggests that using private contractors is more costly for the government. Jesse Russell reports.
A study released this week by the Project on Government Oversight suggests that it costs taxpayers more when the government uses private contractors. Analyzing billing rates of over 35 occupational classifications showed that in 33 of those classifications, using federal employees was less costly. One of the key findings showed that in all 35 classifications, the contractor billing rates were higher than what's considered standard in the private sector. In one case, Pogo discovered that the contractor billed 5 times more than the compensation that would have been paid to federal employees for the same work. The study suggests that if the government continues to contract out services, it needs to do a better job at reaching the fair market value instead of letting itself be built for excessive costs. The organization is pushing Congress to adopt better transparency standards.
This newscast made possible in part by ULICO, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company, and by OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy. The Rick Smith Show.
It is the Republican battle cry, much like when my two-year-old throws her temper tantrum. I put them both in the same category. But here's the thing. There's some Republicans who are looking at Governor Corbett's and Dominic Pileggi's plan to steal Pennsylvania for the Republican presidential candidates. I'm looking at some of them going, wait a second, Texas Representative Pete Sessions, chairman of the House Republicans campaign arm, he said he's not overly thrilled about it because he thinks it could cost a couple of Pennsylvania representatives their job down near the southeast Philadelphia area there. So interesting thoughts. That's why I've asked Pennsylvania State Senator Dalen Leach to come talk to us, who's written a great piece we've got linked over at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Dalen, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick, it's good to be with you.
You know, I look at this, and it's a power grab, pure and simple.
Oh, it's an obscene desecration of 224 years of history. We have always elected a president the same way. When I was a member of the Electoral College in 2008, and I put my vote into the same box that we used to elect John Adams. Both parties have been in power over the course of the last couple of centuries, and we fought hard over substantive issues, but both have resisted the temptation to use temporary power to permanently rig future elections, especially presidential elections. We've had more respect for the system than that, and for our heritage as a democracy than that, until now. Now we finally have a governor who, you know, is willing to throw out 200-some years of history, is willing to do something that is a blatant, transparent power grab, that is willing to make Pennsylvania utterly irrelevant to the presidential selection process. I mean, keep in mind, you know, right now we are a battleground state.
Yep.
He's willing to do all of that just so his guy gets a few more votes next time. I mean, this will cost Pennsylvania not only make us a laughingstock and cost us prestige, it'll cost us hundreds of millions of dollars. both, you know, in just in campaign money alone, there'll be no advertising, there'll be no presidential or vice presidential candidate visits, there'll be no field offices opened up. There was thousands of field offices opened up last time. We lose all that. We become Utah, okay?
Yep.
Because if this bill passes, I can tell you today what the electoral vote will be in 2012. It'll be 12-8. It'll be 12 for the Republican nominee and 8 for Obama. And that'll occur no matter what the people of Pennsylvania actually vote. Obama can win the state by 11 points again. We'll still be giving the large majority of our electoral votes to the Republican nominee. And, you know, keep in mind, your listeners should know that this is not just Pennsylvania. They're trying to do this in every state where Republicans are in temporary control,
yep,
but Democrats tend to win the presidential election. Which
means Ohio, that, Wisconsin, Michigan, all of them.
Well, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Florida. Ohio is 50-50 because the Republicans may still feel they can win Ohio. Okay, so they may be more reluctant to do it there, but they're definitely going to do it here. They've lost 5 times in a row here, and there is no doubt that this is part of a national trend. And the Republicans, you know, have no interest in splitting the electoral votes in places like Texas.
No,
you know, absolutely not. This is what they want. The goal here is for red states to vote as a bloc, and blue states to vote in a divided way. It is affirmative action for Republican electoral votes.
Well, this is nothing but national gerrymandering.
It is absolutely national. I mean, you make a great point, because keep in mind, they want the electoral votes to be divvied up one per congressional district that you carry. The same people who want to divvy the electoral votes up by congressional districts are the very same people who are drawing those congressional districts. I mean, if anyone doesn't think that sounds unfair, they just don't understand the whole concept of fairness. So they are going to gerrymander very, very solid Republican districts that no Democrat has a hope to win. They'll gerrymander half as many safe Democratic districts, someplace to put all the Democrats in the state.
Right.
But at the end of the day, they will guarantee themselves a majority of the electoral votes from Pennsylvania. It is disgusting, you know. One of the things I want to see as this unfolds is where the Tea Party stands on this, because the Tea Party comes out in their three-point hats and their colonial garb and, you know, talks about how they love George Washington and they love the founders. Well, the founders would be appalled at this. Thomas Jefferson specifically wrote about this, saying that you can't do this unless it's done on a national level. You can't just do it one state or two states. You know, let's see if the Tea Party really believes what they say, or are they just shills of the Republican Party?
That's an excellent point. But you brought up something earlier about respect. And, you know, you look at some of these folks, and I don't know that they really have respect for tradition or respect for the nation, for that matter. It's all about my team winning.
Oh, it's so disgusting. There's an article, Pete DeCourcy, who's been doing some great work on this, wrote an excellent article today about, you know, how Tom Corbett is, you know, some Republicans are pushing back because they're worried that if Obama decides to go after one or two electoral votes, it may be in their districts, and they're worried about their own jobs. And so, you know, they've been opposing this bill, or at least expressing some concerns. And Corbett's been telling them, according to this article, don't worry, we're drawing your lines, and I'll raise you the money. This is good for the Republican Party, you know?
This is the guy who said he was going to reform our political system make it better, wasn't it?
It is total BS. This man has no interest in reform. This man is just about, you know, political gain at the expense of, you know, what governor of Pennsylvania would do something to make Pennsylvania irrelevant in the presidential selection process? Would turn us from a battleground state, the center of the universe, the center of attention, the state that everyone works hard to win, to an utter irrelevancy to presidential campaigns? What state, what governor of a state would do that if they're supposed to be fighting for the interest of that state? This is someone who puts just, you know, partisan ideological politics over the welfare of our state. That's true in the taxing of Marcellus Shale. That's true in this particular scheme. And it's disgusting.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a Tea Party neighbor of mine, and he said on this very thing, well, you just read the Constitution. Constitution is very clear. If we wanted to appoint, Rick Perry or Mitt Romney to handle our electors and to handle our votes, we could do that because the Constitution says that the legislature can do whatever it wants.
No, the Constitution does give you that power. But, can you imagine the Tea Party fury if the Democrats suddenly took over the Texas state legislature and said Texas's electoral votes? The liberal Democrats in Austin don't feel that they're getting enough representation at the presidential level. So we're going to divide up Texas electoral votes by congressional district so the Democrats can get 10 or 12 electoral votes out of the state. You would see people going ballistic. And anyone who thinks this is about some legitimate good government issue, I'd ask you to conduct a thought experiment. If it was the Republicans who had carried Pennsylvania the last five times, do you think Governor Corbett would be calling for dividing our electoral votes? Is there a chance on the planet that would happen?
No, not at all.
So,
but I guess my bigger question is, in looking at elections, be it any election, president, congressman, senator, whatever, union elections, should the person with the most or the group with the most votes win? Is that how it should be? And I'm of the mindset that if you believe in democracy, that the guy with the most votes wins, which to me then says this electoral system, we should be looking at something else.
Well, Republicans believe that too, only in states where they get the most votes.
Yeah, but not piecemeal, not state by state. I mean, we can't do anything piecemeal. It's got to be universal.
No, and in fact, people say, for example, I think there are some certain changes to the electoral, to the electoral. I would get rid of the electoral college.
Me too.
Okay, and certainly we could talk about changes to the system, but they have to be national. And they have to be bipartisan. They just can't target states that don't vote the way we like them to vote.
Exactly. And that's where I was getting at. Because, to be honest, to me, it was a travesty in 2000 that Gore did not win when he had the most votes.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. But, at the very least there, putting aside the honesty of the Florida vote, let's just assume it was an honest vote for a minute. At least they played by the rules. Okay? But when you take power in an election and then you use that power to influence future elections, not influence, but literally rig future elections, that is just profoundly evil. I mean, that is something that you are saying we don't care, we don't give a rat's behind about our history, our heritage, we just want to win next time. And we are willing to do absolutely anything. I mean, there are already, pushing legislation to make it harder for Democratic voters to vote all across the state. I mean, this is not an accident. I mean, let me just say this. These people, the DeCourcy article talked about these people have spent $77,000 already in just a couple of weeks.
Wow.
Where'd they get that money?
The Koch brothers, Alec, I can name a number of organizations.
Yeah, they haven't revealed where they got the money because in the Citizens United era, we don't have to reveal where they got the money. But they do reveal where they spent it. And they've spent $77,000 on longtime Republican operatives, well-known Republican operatives. Okay, this is, this is a nationwide effort to do three things. To make it hard for Democratic voters to vote, make it hard to register Democrats. Then, if you register them, make it hard for them to vote. And if somehow they register and vote, make it so it doesn't matter, even if they do turn out to vote. And so we see like the voter ID bill. 25% of African Americans in Pennsylvania, because many live in inner cities, do not have driver's licenses or photo IDs. They will be ineligible to vote next time. Okay?
Yep. My grandmother hasn't had a driver's license in years.
Yeah, exactly. And look, in Wisconsin, another state the Republicans are pushing this stuff in, you have to have a picture ID from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. It's the equivalent of PennDOT. I'll just refer to it as PennDOT just for
And they're instructed not to tell people it's free.
They're instructed not to tell people it's free, but more than that, you have to have a picture from PennDOT, either a driver's license or an alternative non-driver's license picture you can get. So they passed that law, number one. Then they closed 16 $10 offices in poor neighborhoods in Wisconsin and open up 10 new ones in Republican performing areas. Okay? So in Texas, a student ID is no longer sufficient to get a voter, to get a voting card. But a gun license is.
Well, we know where their values are.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, in Florida, they're passing, there's a thing that ex-felons can't vote. Usually, you know, historically, once you serve your time, you're out of prison, you're done, you can vote again. But because, you know, ex-felons tend to be poor, they tend to vote Democratic more often. So they're passing a law that'll just wipe 150,000 Democratic voters off the rolls.
Well, hasn't Florida had that for a long time? Because if I remember right, in my interviews with Greg Palast, his piece "Voting While Black," they scrubbed some 90,000 voters off the roll because they claimed they were felons. In fact, one guy they claimed he was going to be a felon, you know, 7 or 8 years down the road. So if I remember right, in Florida in 2000, that's how they went and they purged a lot of the voting rolls. By kicking people off.
Yeah,
claiming...
this is a very well-coordinated, thought-out, well-funded effort to make sure that Democrats do not win elections.
So how do we?
And there's also well-funded efforts to make sure even if they overcame all that and won elections, they couldn't enact their policies. Various supermajorities. In other words, to enact a republic, like there's something called Tabor. It's complicated. I'm gonna get it, but essentially, what it says is, if a Republican wants to enact a Republican policy, he only needs one-third of the vote to do it. But if a Democrat wants to enact a Democratic policy, they need two-thirds of a vote to do it. Okay? So, I mean, these are all structural, institutional things they're building into the system to just make sure that they always prevail.
So how do we stop this? I mean, how do we stop this here in Pennsylvania first?
Well, number one, I mean, first of all, there have been some Republicans who've come out against it, including the chair of the Republican Party. But all of the reasons are political reasons. Well, it might endanger some of our seats. It might do this. I am waiting for the actual first Republican to stand up and say, and when I say first Republican, I mean office holder, because there have been, including I went on a right-wing talk radio show last night, in Philly, and the guy said, I'm right wing and I vote Republican all the time, but this is the worst idea I've ever heard. So there are some people like that. But I want to hear the first Republican office holder who actually says, you know what, just as a matter of conscience, I can't support this. You know, putting aside political considerations, everything, this is just wrong. It is wrong for one political party to change the rules towards their benefit. And that what's going to take is a huge public outcry, which is why I've been writing. I've been writing not only in the Inquirer, but the Huffington Post. I spoke with the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, Politico, Real Clear Politics, all these people today. Because once people understand that, almost everyone becomes outraged. And that's what it's going to take.
So let me ask you this last question I've got for you. You've got this now that the Republicans have proposed. There's the Metcalf voter ID bill that's going to strip minorities and elderly people of the right to vote. There's the English only nonsense that they're peddling now. How is any of this creating jobs?
Oh no, there's no interest in creating jobs. Governor Corbett was going to create jobs and reform our political process. He has utterly abandoned both of those. Now it's just about turning Pennsylvania into a permanent right-wing bastion, and that, regardless of what the voters want, that is his goal, and that's all he's pursuing.
It's, man, angering and frustrating, and all of that wrapped up into one. Dalen, I appreciate you coming on the program, talking to us again. The piece is PAGOP, Attack on Democracy, over at the Senator's site. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Senator Leach's name. It'll take you right there. Senator, thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Your calls after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Don't know much about the science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I need you. And if you fall for all the crap I spew, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
In the infamous Enron scandals of a decade ago,
unregulated energy hucksters created an array of dummy financial funds so they could evade public scrutiny and perpetrate fraud. To disguise the scams, the funds were given such names as Chuco and Jedi. While Enron's house of cards collapsed, Enron Accounting not only continues in corporate America today, it's also infesting an endeavor that should never be tainted with such financial gimmickry, America's democracy. Corporate hucksters, intent on political profiteering, are setting up dummy funds with such star-spangled names as Make Us Great Again and Restore Our Future. These are super PACs created to amass millions of dollars in unrestricted corporate cash to back the candidacies of particular presidential wannabes. These groups can raise and spend unlimited amounts of money, something the candidates themselves are barred from doing. Already, the dummy funds are becoming larger than the candidates' own campaigns, allowing a few big money interests to pervert our democratic process into their plutocratic plaything. How few? As of August, more than 80% of the money in super PACs backing Republican candidates has come from only 35 people writing six- and seven-figure checks. Technically, these dummy groups must not coordinate their actions with the candidates they back, but this ban is a fraud. For example, Rick Perry's Make Us Great Again PAC is headed by a corporate lobbyist who had been Perry's chief of staff and is now both a major fundraiser and political advisor for Perry. Hello, the front group, the lobbyist, the fundraiser, and the advisor don't have to coordinate. They're all the same person. This is Jim Hightower saying, what these super PACs represent is the Enronization of our politics. It's a legalized corruption that's tantamount to a corporate takeover. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.org.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
We found a better way of making ink seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside. You push the buttons and our voting machine keeps track. You made it so it's very easy to hack. Call for a recount, it will probably fail. But our machines don't leave no paper trail.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. What do you think of this? I mean, the governor and Dominic Pileggi have this scheme that we're going to change how the electoral votes are divvied up in the state for the first time, well, since the beginning. And I would like to know what my T Twizzler friends think. Is this just just politics? It's just how it works. The Constitution gives us the right. We can change 220 years of history. We can do that stroke of a pen. No problem. What do you think? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Because after all, the Constitution does say each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct. It's their choice. So if they wanted Rick Perry to decide how our system was set up and how those electors were done, I guess we could do that. We wouldn't, but we could. And I like what Dalen wrote in his piece about it. This is an obscene, transparent, blatant partisan change in the rules, designed for one purpose, and that's to help the Republican presidential candidates. And that, that is not what governing is about. That is not what being a member of the legislature should be about. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it is about team sport. Maybe it's about my team winning and your team losing. Maybe it is hooray for me and the heck with everybody else. But if this goes through, this is... Well, it's the end of Pennsylvania in presidential politics. You'll never see another president in this Commonwealth again. It's done. But beyond that, what does that say about us? What does it say about the nation? And again, maybe we need this, Jake. Maybe we need to go down this path. Maybe we need to do the whole civil war thing over again.
Well, again, maybe I'm assuming something that isn't there, but this is the kind of politics that turns people off. Think about that. You could have a presidential election in this state where one party wins substantially in total numbers, but yet they would lose the election within the state.
Al Gore won in 2000 by 500,000 votes, the national vote. He had 500,000 more votes across this country, and he lost. I can't remember who the president was who won with 35% of the vote. I'll think about it during the break. But, again, how do you have a legitimate leader? How do you have any legitimacy when you're talking about having someone who has just over a third of the vote? Which is why, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things voting-wise we should be looking at doing. I'm a big fan of instant runoff voting. I think that would encourage a third party. I think it would encourage more people coming out. I'm a big fan of doing away with the Electoral College in general. It should be a popular vote. The guy with the most votes wins, like everything else. And I understand there was some, you know, there's some consideration for smaller states when they set up the Electoral College, but you know what? We can count votes. And I understand that, you know, politicians would spend their money in big vote areas. I understand that. But here's the thing. They aren't going to those small states all that much anyway. So this whole little thing is dangerous for this country. And there's part of me that says maybe we should just put the presidency up on eBay and it can go to the highest bidder, because that seems to be the gig anyway. All the political spots, who can raise the most money? Not the person with the best ideas. Who's got the bucks to get a message out? I mean, I sat and I watched these congressmen talk today. And I listened to Republican after Republican stand up and shill. And a number of Democrats. I mean, that Mike Ross, who I just, you know, the representative from Walmart. We need to let job creators do what they do. We need to let business do whatever they want. We need business to do whatever they can do. And I'm going, you know, what about the working people? There's no such thing as a benevolent corporation. There never has been. There never will be. If you take away this minor protection, and understand, this whole thing with Boeing hasn't even been decided yet. This is them saying, we think there's something here that needs to be investigated. We think that there's enough evidence to take this to trial. And they're saying even before the investigation's done, even before all the evidence is laid out, that we're going to quash this. We're going to make sure that the people never know what goes on. And they're pushing all these polls out there. The big moneyed folks are pushing all these polls saying, oh, gee, well, we think Boeing should do whatever they want to do. Really? Anything they want to do? Do you understand the word anything? Because words do have meaning. Do we want to go back to the days like, you know, in the last century where women were forced to be sterilized? Do we want to go back to the days where children are working in the mines? Do we want to go back to the days of 20 hours of work a day? Sundays off, you got to go to church for a little bit. Do we want to return to that? Do we want to go back to the company store? Do we want to go back to being at the behest of the petty dictator? Because that's where we're going. And when you start pulling these very, very limited laws away, what then are you doing? I mean, they want to repeal the whole board now. They've decided there's a piece of legislation that they're pushing out that they just want to do away with the whole labor relations board because it doesn't work the way we wanted it to. Now, back during the Bush years, when it was attacking workers, when they were using it as the pit bull to put workers in their place, they loved it. Oh, it was fantastic. We love the National Labor Relations Board. Those Kentucky River cases, perfect example how to steal rights away from people. You didn't hear Democrats saying we need to repeal the board. We need to redefine what it's doing. We need to say, hey, you know, you're supposed to be protecting workers, not screwing them. But now that the board is doing what it's supposed to do, actually protecting people, they don't like it. Because the people that Republicans want protected are people like Mr. Boeing, because Mr. Boeing has more rights than Mr. Smith, because Mr. Boeing has a whole hell of a lot more money. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-6767. 7425. Take a quick break, right back after this.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members. Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and farm red. Father, son, left the cameo. Blue denim, head is vacant. Oh, 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 he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of our program, you can download our podcast. And if you've got one of these nifty smartphones, get the Stitcher app, and you can take your program on the go. You want to email me, Rick, at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Well, you know, you look at this whole national gerrymandering thing they're going to be doing, rigging the system so that Republicans win for generations to come. And I guess, you know, there are going to be some people who are going to be okay with that. I'm not. Again, this is one of those moments where you might see the short-term benefit, but over time, what you're really doing is you're eroding voter confidence. And then you're going to have people withdraw even more. And you're going to have people drop out. And again, who wins? The moneyed interest. And if you think things are bad now, you think inequality is bad now, you think inequity is bad now, you think the wealthy have got it too good now, wait. Wait till they have finished off the voting system. Wait till they have completely taken it over. You think we've got the best democracy money can buy right now? Just wait. So I look at this, you know, and I heard, again, people complaining about the welfare system. And look, there's a lot of problems. And a great thing is, we hear about it. So when the story came out that Jack Wagner, the Auditor General, found $5.2 million in out-of-state purchases in May of 2010, evidently found them in all 50 states in the Virgin Islands, which, you know, if you're on welfare, I got to wonder why you're in the Virgin Islands, but we should be looking into that. $5.2 million. Eye-popping number. Here's the problem. You're talking about a little over 2.5%. 2.5% of all of the money spent. To me, that tells me the system is working. And you know what? We heard about the 2.5%, and we can do something about that. Because understand, there are 750,000 people in this state who had EBT cards, these electronic bank transfer cards. 750,000 people in the state of Pennsylvania in May of 2010 when this thing was done. About $200 million was spent feeding these people and their families. And you got a couple a-holes, a couple of them, about 2.6%, if you will, that are screwing it up. So you know what happens? You go get those 2.6% and you deal with them, which is why I'm glad Jack Wagner brought this up. Now, the right, what they want to do is we need to destroy the system. See, there are 2.6% of the population. They're cheating. And as I thought about this, I said, you know, if only we had 2.6% of corporate America cheating us, our treasuries would be full. If only 2.6% of the banks screwed us in 2008, we'd be flush with cash. But the right wants you to believe those poor people are screwing the country up. Those 2.6% of the people, they're really sticking it to us. And I'm a huge fan of Jack Wagner. I think he's doing his job. He's going and getting those people. And every time I hear somebody say, I was in the supermarket and I saw somebody with an EBT card and they were buying beer. And I say, well, did you get their name? Well, no. Well, I got the number of DEP right here on my phone. We could call the public welfare people. Report them. I had a guy tell me his sister cheating the system. Yeah, my sister's been cheating the system for years. Her deadbeat husband doesn't want to work. So they both collect. I said, well, what's their names? Let's call. I got the phone right here. Oh, I don't want to do that. So one of two things. Either you're BSing me and it's not true, or somebody's getting away with something for a short term and they're going to get caught. Trust me, they always do. Most of the time, though, I do believe it's BS. Because you hear people say, well, I was behind them. They were buying thick steaks and they were buying caviar and champagne. Which I'm going, you know, these EBT cards, you get about $3 a day. I don't know that you're going to buy thick steaks. I don't know that you're going to buy caviar. And you can't buy beer because the register won't let you do it. But, you know, don't let the facts get in the way of reality. Now, are there people who cheat the system? Yes. And people like Jack Wagner are the kind of attack dogs and pit bulls I want hunting those folks down, because I don't want this system destroyed for people who need it. You know, I go back to when I was a kid, and I was like 7 years old, and I will never forget. My mother sent me to the store because at this point she had lost her job, and we had to go back on food stamps, and you had to take these cartoonish looking coupons to the store. And I was picking up a couple of things that she wanted me to get and said I could get the 10-cent Nutter Butter bar, which I then put up on the counter. And the woman behind the counter gave me the biggest raft of you-know-what that you could come up with. Not still food, but it was just to her that that's something that you shouldn't be having. And again, it wasn't wrong. It was she passed judgment. And I think a lot of that is what we see folks doing. Am I glad they did away with the cartoonish looking coupons? Yeah. Am I glad they went to those cards? Yeah. People should be able to maintain their dignity when they're trying to feed their families. I wish we could give big, giant, cartoonish looking coupons to the CEOs who are screwing this country up and have a stigma attached to that, but that'll never happen. But here again, Jake, you know, I look at this and you hear those stories constantly. I know somebody, or I saw somebody, and it's BS. It's those anecdotal stories that people love to tell to prop themselves up.
Well, I've heard that. I've heard that on radio when we start talking about welfare, and especially some of the local shows that tend to be right-wing. And they do talk about people purchasing beer, and like you said, that's not going to happen. But then they go into the personal things. Well, they were purchasing donuts and chips. As if somehow, now, is that the best thing to eat? No. But it's not illegal. And God forbid that anybody, including those people who don't have welfare cards, eat donuts and chips. It's just a way of denigrating the system and looking down on those people. And what the vast majority of people, and this is the way society is, they have this stigma about anybody in welfare. They're cheating the system, or they should be, they're lazy, or they should be out working, when the truth is most people are on there less than 2 years. And it's a helping hand up, and they go on to be fruitful members of society, and they turn out to be good people. That's not the story that gets out.
They turn out to be good people.
Well, no, what I mean is they turn out to be good members of society, contributing,
okay.
i.e., contributing members of society. And it's designed to give somebody a helping, temporary helping hand up.
Yeah.
But that's not the cliche. The cliche is that most people in welfare are generational. That's just not true. Are there people who are generational? Yes.
Yeah.
Are there people who cheat? Yes.
But here's the thing. I mean, you look at a lot of these low-paid workers, the Walmartization of the nation, where you're working 40 hours for a company that's paying you minimum wage, and you've got to feed your kids. I'm sorry, I don't have a problem with mom taking that card and buying.
No, I don't either. Well, that's another thing of the right wing. They're the first one to talk about family values, but they forget, exactly as you said, that card provides food for children.
But you look at this, you talk about 750,000 people in this state had one of these cards in May of 2010. $200 million of expenditures. That tells you how little they get. 750,000 people, $200 million, tells you how little they get. But only 5.2 million of it, they say, out of state, Virgin Islands, you could maybe argue misused. I mean, to me, that tells me there's a system that doing a pretty decent job. Now, am I saying that we shouldn't be cracking down? No. You go find out what that was, and you deal with the problem as it is. But you don't do like the Republicans want us to do, which is just trash the system. Now, this is one thing that I truly, truly do not believe in. Your thoughts, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
My name is Precious, and I help people with mental illnesses live better lives. I work for you, the taxpayers, as a mental health case manager. People with mental illnesses can hold jobs, pay taxes, and provide for themselves. But many of them need help from social workers like me to reach their full potential. Imagine if you or someone you love needed that kind of help and had to go on a waiting list for 7 years. That's what 10 years of budget cuts have already done to mental health caseloads in our state. I know these are tough economic times, but without support services, some individuals get worse and can be a danger to themselves and their communities. And that costs all of us much more in the long run. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they vote to increase funding for programs that help people with mental illnesses lead full lives.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
I'm a innocent bystander. Somehow I got stuck. brains and money.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So Rick Perry was speaking at Liberty University. Now, understand, Liberty University is the, I would say, one of the far-out religious institutions. It was started by Jerry Falwell, very, very conservative, evangelical, religious, way out. Thumperish, if you will. Evidently, the mention of the NRA drew a louder cheer when it came out of Rick Perry's mouth than did the word Christian values. Kind of a little spattering of applause for Christian values. NRA ruckus, applause. People, like you'd see in a black church where they're doing backflips in the aisle. That's kind of how I saw. Liberty University doing this. When you have these Christians cheering guns, they'll probably go wild over this kid. This 15-year-old kid was arrested in Nevada, California. Just a routine traffic stop. They came up to the car and they noticed that the kid had a rocket launcher in the back seat of his car, a U.S. military issued rocket launcher. And you go, what exactly were you going to do with a rocket launcher? Fortunately, we do not know, and we will not have to find out. Maybe it'd be like these crazy kids in Oregon who just decided, 16, 17, and 15-year-old just decided, you know what, we're just going to go get ourselves some guns, and we're going to go shooting some cats. Going to go on a cat shooting spree. Good, clean American fun, Give the kids, a rifle with some ammunition. Set them out on their SUV and just shot at least 50 cats. They were at least, I guess good shots. So here they are facing a year in prison, and they deserve that. But, bringing up Liberty University, cheering guns, I guess good for them. Scott Kies, one of the guys from Think Progress we've had on the show a couple of times, went with a video camera. And, he started asking the people there, the students at Liberty University, if they thought it was an unchristian thing to do to allow people to die. And, without fail, he went through and every one of the students there, thought it was, an unchristian thing to do. And, of course, he was referencing the Republican debate when asked if we should allow someone to die, that the crowd said, yeah, let them die. Screw them. They didn't buy health care. The heck with them. And we talked about Ron Paul. Oddly enough, Ron Paul was the guy who asked the question. His campaign chairman, who died from viral pneumonia, didn't have health insurance. Well, it turns out, and when I talked about this the other night, I was under the impression that he chose not to buy health insurance. As this story has been coming out, originally it was played as this guy just chose not to do it. He was a well-educated guy, and just chose, don't have the money, just chose not to do it. Turns out that this guy had a pre-existing condition, and there is nobody on the planet that would have given him insurance at any cost because of this pre-existing condition. So now the story has kind of gone, well, would Obamacare have saved this guy's life? Because now they have to give them insurance, and if you can't afford it, then there are these high-risk pools. Like here in Pennsylvania, you can be part of a high-risk pool if you're uninsured for 6 months and you can't get insurance. And so the question then becomes is, what the hell is Ron Paul talking about? Somebody close to him, somebody, 49-year-old man, died of viral pneumonia and had no health insurance. Why? Not because he was irresponsible, because they wouldn't give it to him at any cost. Do you think that's wrong? Because I do. And it is an unchristian thing to do, don't you think?
Absolutely.
So when I saw Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs standing up there, you know, somebody had to fess up. I mean, Gingrich and Ron Paul going, well, we want churches to do it. We want, you know, private charity to do it. And my response is if that were the case, because we came from that position, we came from there. If they were doing it, they were able to keep up, and they had good care and decent outcomes, we'd still be doing it. But what we learned is they're inefficient, they're inexperienced, and for the most part, not very good at it. And they couldn't keep up. So we as a society, all of us as a community, said, you know what? Nobody's going to have these problems. We're going to start community hospitals so that everybody has the opportunity to have health care. But the profiteers, much like we're hearing now, privatize everything. The profiteers stepped in and said, oh, there's profit there. There's money to be made. And they lined their pockets. And look where we are. And next week we're going to, I'm told, Wendell Potter will be in the area. I am told we're going to get Wendell Potter here on the program sometime next week to talk about the health insurance industry. And I think this is a guy who spent years working in the health insurance industry. And the story he tells is, look, Wall Street dominated. We had to meet those Wall Street numbers every month, every quarter, every year. It was the same thing. Squeeze every dime. Not worrying about care, worrying about costs. And we have a healthcare system that worries more about costs than about care. And that's something we got to deal with. So, you know, when I look at Michelle Bachmann, now, again, going back to Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, she brought up that stupid statement that, well, you know, a woman came up to me, told me that her daughter got retarded because she took, you know, she took this vaccine. You know, she got a vaccine and now she's retarded. And I'm going, really? You going to buy that? And I don't think anybody buys that. But now you've got two bioethic professors who are saying, you know what? Prove it, honey. In fact, we're going to put money up. The two of them have put up $11,000 for her to reveal who this woman is and for them to review this child's health records, because maybe they can help. If I were the woman and I believe this, I would be stepping forward. Because if someone's going to help my child, I'm going to be the first one in line. But you know what I think happened? Got to tell you what I think happened. Much like the welfare story, where I saw that woman, I saw the welfare queen. She was there with the Dom Perignon and the 3-inch steaks and the caviar. Much like that story, I think it's fantasy. I think Michelle Bachmann has a special friend. And I think she's a little detached from reality. And it's okay to have a little special friend. But don't use that special friend to destroy the health of millions of young girls in this country. Don't use the power that we've given you to be in the spotlight to destroy life-saving vaccines. Now look, I'll be the first one to say I'm skeptical of just about everything. But the information that I've read, and when my daughter's old enough and we're talking with her doctor right now, she will have the vaccine because we know that will help her. Now, do I think Rick Perry was right? No. I don't want the government telling me she has to have it. It is between me and my doctor and my daughter and our doctor. But here again, this woman, nuts. Completely divorced from reality.
Well, it was purely a political stunt. I mean, that's pretty obvious.
I understand political stunt. It was a bad one.
I believe she realized that this was an important debate. And she needed, if not a knockout punch, she needed to regain some of that ground. And she was trying to grab any issue, and she thought that this was one issue where she could go after the governor.
Now,
and she did.
Now, I think she has a point, is pointing out the fact that he got money from the company that makes the vaccine.
Yeah, and he fudged the numbers a little bit. just a little bit.
You know, I think she's got a point there. And I don't think that we should be allowing private for-profit corporations who have any business to do with the state to have any money going to these politicians.
Well.
Which brings us back to the original point of most of our election problems. It's the money. If we could get all of this undisclosed corporate money out, if we could get all of this corporate money out and actually return it to you and me, maybe we would have a better political system.
Well, the one hope, if the governor of Texas becomes a Republican nominee, is when you start digging into this guy's past, you realize that he's basically on a massive scale. He sold government to the highest bidder.
Of course.
Blatantly. Well, now you're laughing, but my point is this. Do most politicians, you know, cater to their contributors? Yeah, but he did it. He took it to another level, Rick. And he made a process where, okay, what are you giving me? Okay, how about you? You want to get more in that? How about you over here in the right? You want to give me more?
So you're saying it's an auction?
It was basically, that's exactly.
It's eBay.
In a metaphoric way, he had an auction.
It's governing by eBay.
Government to the highest bidder. And they'll find that out, the American people. I mean, this guy is the king.
Do you think he's even better than Corbett here? You know, an entire industry not paying taxes, and I guess now they're talking about some type of way.
Well, probably only because Texas is a little bigger state, Rick. That's probably the only saving grace.
Could be. Texas is a rat-to-wake state. It's a great state. It's a great state with a lot of minimum wage jobs. That's what it is. And I don't know that we, as the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, want to emulate Texas. There are a lot better places to want to emulate. But, you know, again, it's all in who. And that's what politics really is. It's about who you are and where you are in the scheme. If you're a billionaire, if you're one of the millionaires and billionaires, you definitely want Rick Perry and the Corbetts. You want the right wing. Because they're going to line your coffers. They're going to fill your pockets, man. But if you're a working stiff, where do you think the money comes from to fill those pockets? It's going to come from you. And it's that simple. Now, I wish I could say the Democratic Party was your savior. It is not. I wish I could say that the Democrats had the right plan and the right idea. I won't, because I don't think they do. I think too much, they're feeding from the same trough. So there's very few things that they're very distinguishable on. Now, the NLRB thing, there's a distinguishing line. But when you start talking about taxes and you start talking about regulation, it's seeming more and more trade policy, heaven forbid. It seems like, you know, they're the same party. And I think Ralph Nader is right on a lot of frames, being that, you know, this country is run by a two-party dictator system, and they have one view. Feed the wealth class. Even though you've got the Warren Buffetts of the world saying, wait a minute, tax me. Take money from me to educate children. Take the money, build an infrastructure so I can make more money. Educate those kids so I can have smart workers. Do something constructive instead of saying, here's some tax breaks for your great, 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 great grandchildren. Because that's all we're doing now. You know, and we'd love to believe, and I would too, I would love to believe that the wealth class, you know, they've got the plan. They're the smart people who know how to use the money, and they're going to do it in the best interest of society. But sadly, I know that's not the case. You know who they're going to look out for? Themselves. Not you, not me, them. No such thing as a benevolent corporation. We're going to come right back, talk about the NLRB and what the Republicans pulled today. Right back after this.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. If the Medicaid program is slashed by hundreds of billions of dollars, as a House Republican plan would do, millions of low-income senior citizens and disabled people will lose their last health care lifeline. Families USA Director Ron Pollack.
It would have cut
cut from the existing program, $771 billion over the next 10 years. It would have eliminated the expansion of coverage that's in the Affordable Care Act. And so it is clear that many millions of people who now consider Medicaid their lifeline would lose that coverage.
Pollack says America has the resources to expand rather than cut Medicaid, but political decisions are being made to inflict more pain on the poor, elderly, and disabled rather than require wealthy people and corporations to pay their fair shares to sustain programs like Medicaid. And Pollack says it's not just poor families with children who will be without that health care lifeline should Medicaid be slashed.
If we slash Medicaid, this is not just going to cut coverage for families with children. It's going to force grandma out of a nursing home. It's going to prevent grandma from getting care at home or in the community. And that's going to have a real adverse impact on families across the country.
The UAW is continuing labor contract talks with the Detroit 3 automakers. If talks break down with no agreement, the GM and Chrysler contracts will be decided by binding arbitration. Ford workers are the only Detroit 3 UAW workers who preserve the right to strike should no agreement be reached. UAW workers at the 3 U.S. automakers have given up thousands of dollars a year in concessions and are looking for improvements in their contracts with the now profitable automakers. A new study suggests that using private contractors is more costly for the government. Jesse Russell reports.
A study released this week by the Project on Government Oversight suggests that it costs taxpayers more when the government uses private contractors. Analyzing billing rates of over 35 occupational classifications showed that in 33 of those classifications, using federal employees was less costly. One of the key findings showed that in all 35 classifications, the contractor billing rates were higher than what's considered standard in the private sector. In one case, Pogo discovered that the contractor billed 5 times more than the compensation that would have been paid to federal employees for the same work. The study suggests that if the government continues to contract out services, it needs to do a better job at reaching the fair market value instead of letting itself be built for excessive costs. The organization is pushing Congress to adopt better transparency standards.
This newscast made possible in part by Ulico, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company, and by OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Thank you. The National Labor Relations Act was a New Deal initiative which helped save American capitalism by creating a process which would protect the rights of employees and employers. This was before NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO, which tore legal rights for workers apart, moved millions of jobs out of the U.S. Yes, we stand for the workers at Boeing in Washington State, but we also stand for the workers at Boeing in South Carolina, because they will have no recourse if Boeing wants to move jobs to China. You can't say you want to create jobs here at home while destroying the rights of workers to organize, the right to collective bargaining. These are basic rights in a democratic society. You can't say you want to protect American jobs and not protect American workers. Take away workers' rights to free speech, take away workers' rights to due process, and you create a new class of slave laborers here in the United States who are helpless to stop the movement of jobs out of America.
I'll tell you, I've had enough. And I hope, you know, there's part of me, I like Marcy Kaptur, I like Dennis Kucinich, but Dennis is that voice, that fiery voice who willing to stand up for working people, and he's absolutely right. I mean, there's nothing that protects the people of South Carolina from them just moving the plant to China or somewhere else. You know, it's one of these situations where be careful what you ask for, because we are moving down that path almost to slavery. And I've told you before, we're never going back to slavery. That would mean that the companies have to actually feed us and house us. It's much better to rent so that when they break us, they can just discard us. It's that simple. Anyway, Louis Gohmert, the Republican representative from Texas, he put out his American Jobs Act of 2011. You know what it was? Cut corporate tax rates to zero. I think there's a clear difference between what the president's got out there and what Louis would have us do. Anyway, today the Republicans rammed through this Protecting Boeing from Breaking the Law Act. 8 Democrats sided with the Republicans. It's been rammed through. It's probably going to die in the Senate, but it really, it's really sending a clear campaign message
That's why I've asked Brian Corliss, communications representative for the Machinists Union District Lodge 751 out there in Washington State. He watched the debates this afternoon. Brian, thanks for taking time for me.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I watched today as the Republicans stood up and one by one said why we need to let corporations do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah. Basically, they stood up and made a big grandstand show about corporate rights and in the process trampled all over the rights of working people like you and me.
Yeah, Mr. Boeing, he's going to do pretty well, and Mr. GE and Mr. Exxon and Mr. all those big companies, they'll do fine.
Yeah, and it's you mentioned in the lead-in there, talking about jobs moving from South Carolina, the next step is to go overseas. You know, one of the things that they did with this act that the Republicans ramrodded through today, it takes the teeth out of a law that actually has stopped corporations from shipping jobs overseas. I don't know if you saw that letter that the 250 law professors signed on to last week.
No, I didn't.
Okay. One of the things they pointed out is a case that happened about 10 years ago down in California. And in that case, the workers there were trying to organize a plant, and management came in and said, if you organize this plant, we're shipping the work to Mexico. And sure enough, the workers organized. The management moved the plant to Mexico, and the union came in and sued under this provision of the National Labor Relations Act. And they won, and they got the plant back. And it exists today in California. It saved American jobs. Under what the Republicans tried to pass or are trying to pass through the Congress to now, that law, that protection goes away. We lose that one little bit of protection we had to keep jobs in America.
And, at a time when we can afford to not lose one job, what's concerning to me is how short-sighted their views are. And what scares me is that if we continue down this path, there'll be no protections for workers, and we'll go back to the days where, you were living in fear of losing your job or, basically having to do whatever the boss told you had to do or you were fired.
Yeah, and from our perspective, it really seems that that's what Boeing wants to do in this case. It wants to set up a situation where it can tell our members up here in Puget Sound and in Portland, too. There's work in Portland, Oregon that's in play here as well. They want to be able to tell them that, hey, if you don't accept whatever contract offer we make, we're just going to take your work away and we're going to move it to somewhere else. And that means that our workers can't vote on a contract offer based on whether or not it's a good contract offer. Their choice is, okay, bad contract or no job. And that's why we're fighting this. We want our people to be able to choose free of that kind of coercion.
Let me ask you this, Brian, because, I've seen a new Rasmussen poll came out. 64% of the people are siding with Boeing and with the Republicans on this because business should be able to do whatever they want. I sat and I thought about it for a while. Do you think it's that most people I've likened it to Stockholm syndrome, that people have been beaten. They've now identified with their captor. They believe that there's something called a benevolent corporation, that all these wonderful things were bestowed on them by this wonderful entity. Do you think it's that they're so used to not having a say, not having a voice, and when the boss wants to take something away, it's just how it is, so they don't understand when a group of employees do have the ability to have some say in what happens, that they just don't identify?
I think you're pretty close to the truth there. I know, before I came to work at the union, I spent 20 years as a working journalist, covering business and labor issues. And honestly, I didn't know what the National Labor Relations Board did. I didn't really know at first blink what Boeing had tried to do here. It was against the law. It wasn't until our lawyers stood up and said, hey, look at this. This is what the law says. This is illegal. And I think the problem has been is that for the past, two out of the last three administrations prior to President Obama, we had a National Labor Relations Board that just didn't do anything.
Right.
And so we as a people just aren't aware of what our rights as working Americans are.
Yeah, see, Brian, I think I'd correct that a little bit. They didn't do anything for working people. During the Bush years, the National Labor Relations Board did an awful lot against us. The Kentucky River cases are just horrible pieces of decisions, and there are a number of things that were really destructive during the Bush years. And which is why I said, you know, when the Labor Relations Board was actually doing something for workers, you know, people, what? I mean, Boeing probably thought nothing would come of it because companies are used to breaking the law. They're used to getting away with doing whatever they want, and they were actually probably surprised that anyone even blinked.
Yeah, and, you know, because when you look at the case law, and unfortunately I've had to spend way too much time reading legal briefs the last few months, but when you look at the case law, there was a 1974 case involving GE that is exactly what Boeing is trying to accomplish here. They have GE set up a non-union plant and a union plant, and made them compete for the same work. And, you know, they told the union plant, if you don't accept our contract offer, we'll take your work away. And they told the non-union plant, if you ever organize, we'll take your work away. The courts came in and said, no, that's illegal. You can't do that.
But
and
isn't that exactly what's going on right now? I mean, this is the Republican argument. The Southern right-to-work states are saying, look, we can create jobs by stealing from Washington and from the Northern states.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's unfortunate, you know. I mean, the right-to-work states, they need jobs, but they need they need the help of all of us in America to create good, sustainable jobs, that work for all Americans. I mean, this whole notion that Boeing is creating jobs in South Carolina, I really want to impress upon your listeners, it's not happening. All Boeing is doing is moving jobs from the Pacific Northwest down to Charleston. We've got 1,800 people up here in the Everett factory who are going to lose their jobs over the next couple of years as the South Carolina plant ramps up. And that is a fact. And nobody wants to talk about it. All the Republicans want to talk about is, 1,000 jobs in Charleston. Well, 1,000 jobs in Charleston is great for Charleston. But if we're going to take away 1,800 jobs, that's a net loss for America, and it just doesn't make any sense.
And this is where I want, you know, working people to really get the point here, because you've hit on something that's really important. In Washington, those are really good paying jobs, family sustaining jobs, that, you know, one person could work and one person can stay home and raise the kids. Now you're moving it to Charleston, wages going to be less, benefits going to be less, and less jobs. Not less cost of the planes, not less cost of what we the taxpayers are giving them. So who gets that extra money? Who gets that extra benefit? Well, the shareholders, the investor class.
Yeah, and it's in the shareholders, the biggest ones, all sit on the board of directors in Chicago. So Chicago. Few people in Chicago benefit from this, not Charleston. Not Puget Sound, and not America.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Brian Corliss, Communications Representative with the Machinist Union, District Lodge 751. You know, I look at another piece of legislation. This representative from South Carolina, Trey Gowdy, he has introduced the National Labor Relations Reorganization Act. And how he's going to reorganize it, we're going to get rid of the National Labor Relations Board. Just chuck it.
I think he wants to create a National Labor Suppression Board. Make sure that nobody raises any objections to corporate overlords doing whatever they want.
Let me ask you something radical, because there's part of me that says do away with the whole National Labor Relations Act. Let us take this to the streets.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I can go there with you on the radio. But,
like I said, radical.
Maybe we can hash it out over beers sometime.
there's an excellent idea. But, you know, for me, at some point, you can only be nibbled away until you're gone. We can only allow these laws to be weakened until there's nothing left for us, and the laws are only there to be used against us, which is what they're trying to do.
Yeah. And, I mean, we're kind of getting the sense that if we go down and we lose this, both in, on the political front, there's going to be not much left. But, we're definitely fighting it hard in the court. And in fact, I think the whole reason we're seeing huge political sideshow surrounding this whole thing is because Boeing has such a weak legal case. They're going to lose. They've testified in front of Congress that they expect to lose. They broke the law, you know, and it's a pretty clear-cut violation of the act. So the really only chance they've got is to
retroactively change the law.
Yeah, they've dragged out the proceedings in court until they finally can get a political solution to their legal problem.
I wish I could do that. I wish I could continue to break the law, break the law, break the law, and then have someone go back over the years and make it all right. Because as I've been saying, corporate America, they break the law, and then they say, well, we need reform. The laws are broken. It's not that we're breaking the law. It's that the laws are broken, and we should reform them so that what we're doing is right.
And that's exactly what's happening here. Boeing doesn't want to play it by the rules, so it's getting its friends on the far right to change the rules for them.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you got 8 Democrats who voted for this today. That just frustrates the daylights out of me. And they're the ones you would expect. Like the congressman from Walmart. You expect him. Tennessee. Cooper from Tennessee. Schuler from North Carolina. The regular suspects. But you still got 8 Democrats who went over.
Yeah. Well, and that just makes us appreciate the people who stood up for us even more. Especially want to give a shout out to Congressman Kucinich.
Yep.
He's been a real advocate for us, and we very much appreciate it.
Yeah, I love Dennis. But here's what gets me, and the last question I've got for you, because this isn't decided. I mean, I'm amazed that all this, and this isn't going to be a campaign issue, I understand, but all of this hubbub for something that is really at the very beginning of the process.
Right. The NLRB hearing is still going on out here in Seattle, and we haven't actually gotten to witness testimony yet. Boeing's been fighting and arguing and trying to keep all the relevant evidence out of the court record. Just this week, they filed objections to some of the paperwork that we had filed that included top secret documents that we found on, with a Google search. Boeing posted some stuff on the internet. We submitted it as supporting evidence in one of our court filings, and they freaked out that we were leaking secrets that apparently their lawyers didn't know that they'd already posted online.
Well, they were there for them, not for you.
So it's, we're hoping we can get through this, this mess with the subpoena wrangling and get to some actual testimony in the trial, and we'll be able to ask Boeing CEO Jim McNerney and his other top executives some really pointed questions about, were you lying when you said the reason you went to South Carolina was because of our strikes, or were you lying when you said that there were other reasons? We're looking forward to that.
Yeah, I am too, and we're gonna continue to follow this. We've been following it from the beginning, and we'd love to have you back, Brian Corliss. Appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
You bet. Anytime you want us on, just call.
I will most certainly do. Thanks so much. Brian Corliss, communications representative with the Machinist Union, District Lodge 751. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
The Rick Smith Show.
In the infamous Enron scandals of a decade ago, unregulated energy hucksters created an array of dummy financial funds so they could evade public scrutiny and perpetrate fraud. To disguise the scams, the funds were given such names as Chuco and Jedi. While Enron's house of cards collapsed, Enron Accounting not only continues in corporate America today, it's also infesting an endeavor that should never be tainted with such financial gimmickry, America's democracy. Corporate hucksters, intent on political profiteering, are setting up dummy funds with such star-spangled names as Make Us Great Again and Restore Our Future. These are super PACs created to amass millions of dollars in unrestricted corporate cash to back the candidacies of particular presidential wannabes. These groups can raise and spend unlimited amounts of money, something the candidates themselves are barred from doing.
Already, the dummy funds are becoming larger than the candidates' own campaigns, allowing a few big-money interests to pervert our democratic process into their plutocratic plaything. How few? As of August, more than 80% of the money in super PACs backing Republican candidates has come from only 35 people writing six- and seven-figure checks. Technically, these dummy groups must not coordinate their actions with the candidates they back. But this ban is a fraud. For example, Rick Perry's Make Us Great Again PAC is headed by a corporate lobbyist who had been Perry's chief of staff and is now both a major fundraiser and political advisor for Perry. Hello? The front group, the lobbyist, the fundraiser, and the advisor don't have to coordinate. They're all the same person. This is Jim Hightower saying, what these super PACs represent is the Enronization of our politics. It's a legalized corruption that's tantamount to a corporate takeover.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast there. You can watch the video. Also, if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take your program on the go. If you've got a question, comment, something on your mind, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Or you can email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. Well, it looks like Bob Casey's going to have a couple of people running against him. Not too long ago, this Mark Scarningi or Scaringi, or he's not going to win, so I'm not going to have to learn to pronounce his name. He announced he was going to run for it. And now you've got this John Vernon, a retired colonel, retired back in 2009, Army College guy. I guess he's from the Carlisle area. He's now going to be running against him. And I liked what he said. He said, I'm running for the United States Senate because we are at a crossroads in history. We must restore our economy and stop the runaway government spending. We must get our fiscal house in order or our children and grandchildren will never get out from under the crushing debt and heavy taxes. And did you make that up yourself? Or was that, did Alec do that too? Was that cut and paste from something? That seems to be the Republican, that's all they have. You're right, we are at a crossroads in history. The crossroads is, are we going to have a nation worth saving? Once the marauders take over, once the corporate people run this country, you and I are done. We will just be cogs in the wheel, tools to be used and discarded. And if you think I'm kidding, just wait to see where we're going. Look at these policies that they're rolling out. Look at these bills that are coming out. The English only thing, the voter ID thing, so we can suppress the vote. This National Labor Relations Board thing. Where are the jobs bills? I mean, if you really, really believe in your whole pledge thing. In fact, I'm going to have to read the pledge because I'm kind of thinking this whole statement came right out of the pledge, maybe cut and paste right out of that. But they want to fundamentally change this country forever. Just look what they're doing. They want to do here. And I'm hoping, because the only way it stops, the only way this changing how the electors are being allocated, the only way it stops is if Republicans step forward and say no. Because there's nothing I can do. There's nothing the Democratic Party can do. They can file a lawsuit, but they're going to lose. There's nothing anyone can do on the left. It's a done deal if the right pushes it through. If our legislature is as radical as some say it is, this is a done deal. And then you'll see Michigan do it. because Michigan is another one of those states. They can fix. Wisconsin, another one. And we will have a permanent right-wing, extreme right-wing pro-business president for well, probably until I die. And is that what we really want? Now, again, like we were talking about earlier, we could change the entire system and the way we elect presidents, but it has to be across the board, across the country. Every state has to do it. But for one state, two states to change and really have the kind of impact that Pennsylvania would have doing that, I think it's criminal. Absolutely criminal. And you look at what Texas, you know, they talk about Texas. Love Texas. I love Texas. Texas is a right-to-work state. Great state. We want to be like Texas, according to Governor Corbett. They have something called pay or lose. They did this whole tort reform. And the businesses, boy, they're all tingly in the panties. They couldn't be happier. Because that means you and me and anybody else who's harmed by their product or harmed in any way, if we sue and we lose, we're broke. We're done. Game over. So you're basically risking your life to take on one of these big multinational corporations or any entity. And I look at this case, and I've talked about it before, this cheerleader. And this is a travesty of justice. But this cheerleader was at a party, had a little something to drink, pushed into a room, and she was raped. The person that raped her was on the basketball team. He pled guilty to a crime of assault. They dropped it down because their kids dropped it down. Okay, you know, he's not going to spend his whole life in jail. He'll do a little slap on the wrist kind of thing if he agrees to it. Because, you know, they're just kids, you know. It wasn't really like it was, you know, a brutal rape kind of thing. You know, she was asking for it. She was drunk, right? She was there. Yeah, she was asking for it, according to them. Personally, if it was my kid, if that was my daughter, I wouldn't be talking about this story. And Raheem, Mr. Bolton, the rapist, he wouldn't be here. We'd be talking about a whole nother trial, mine, for murder. But that's a whole different story for a whole nother day. Anyway, Mr. Bolton, the one who allegedly raped her and pled guilty to assault, he was at the free throw line shooting hoops. Big game. Because, you know, sports down in Texas. Sports a big thing. So, big game, kids shooting free throws, girl, cheerleader. She says, I'm not cheering for a guy who raped me. So, she stood off the side, folded her arms, and said, I'm not saying a word. Well, they threw her off the team. She filed suit. Look, you violated my rights. My right to free speech. Well, took it to court. She lost. Evidently, in this country, if you're part of a high school cheerleading team and somebody on the basketball team rapes you, you have to cheer for them while they're shooting free throws. That's the ruling. Anyway, she loses. Now they want her to pay a whole ton of money. I think it was close to $100,000 at one point. Or it was $45,000. Well, now they're recalculating because they've gone and they've appealed it. She's only going to have to pay $39,000 because, you know, the court ruled that one of the things, yeah, she was right. It violated her free speech, you know, because, you know, yeah, you know, so what? We'll let that one go. But she made four charges. So now of the $45,000, she's going to have to pay on three of the four because, yeah, it was a violation of her First Amendment rights. But, you know, she charged some other stuff, too. So those other three things were deemed frivolous. So now she's ordered to pay because she didn't want to cheer for her rapist. Is this what we want in the state of Pennsylvania? Now, like I said, as my daughter, we wouldn't be talking about that. There would have been no assault charges. There would have been nothing. It would have been, and there's part of me, and I go back to my grandfather, Jake, who, you know, said this was a much better country when you had a problem with somebody and you went and made a citizen out of them. And you smacked each other around a little bit, and people learn to not do things to each other like that. Maybe we need to go back to that. Maybe the problem with this country is we've got too many people who feel that they need to be able to impose their will on everybody else without repercussion. Just a thought. Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back and we'll talk with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service, right back after this. Stick around.
This is why we fight, why we lie awake. This is why we fight.
Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
Sitting at the kitchen table with Tom and his laptop.
My name's Tom, and I'm here today to learn how to save money on my prescriptions with Capital Blue Cross.
Capital's VP of Pharmacy Services, Meenock, is here. She's showing Tom how to use the Capital website to learn his prescription price before he heads to the pharmacy today.
You would want to know what is the cost of that medication to basically stretch your health care dollar, because that's your dollar.
The point is, members have options to save time and money. And if Tom wants to log on at 1 a.m. to renew a prescription, that's fine, too.
Having that flexibility to be able to order prescriptions at any time of the day or night is fantastic. And the mail order feature is really like a self-service feature. We love that.
Meenock doesn't usually make house calls, but today she's happy to help.
This is one of the ways we care more, so we do more.
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Well, you know, the fighting is already, it's been all day long. We've been watching the NLRB thing. We've been watching the Senate hearings, all kinds of stuff going on in Washington, D.C. I guess there's going to be a little break now. They can only argue for so long. But here to tell us what's going on in Washington today is Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you very much.
So John Boehner gave another one of those boring speeches, and I guess he admitted he's not having fun.
I'm not going to get into that, but he did say that President Obama's jobs plan is a poor substitute for the policies that are needed to put America back to work. And he also says that the Joint Select Committee can tackle tax reform, and it should. However, here it comes. He says, the committee can develop principles for broad-based tax reform that will lower rates for individuals and corporations while closing deductions, credits, and special carve-outs in our tax code, and I hope it will, but he made it very clear that tax increases are not on the cards.
And to me, that just makes absolutely no sense. I mean, to have a blanket statement like that, that under no circumstances are we going to increase any revenue into the federal government, to me, just, it just seems
But he's not quite saying that. He's not quite saying that. He's saying something that not everybody in the House agrees with on his side. He is saying develop principles for broad-based tax reform that will lower rates for individuals and corporations while closing deductions, credits, and special carve-outs in our tax code. So he is supporting that idea, and there are some Republicans who don't even go that far.
Well, I'll give you that, but at the end of the day, if you're still talking about cutting corporate tax rates, you're still talking cutting tax rates overall, you're still talking about cutting some revenue coming in.
The president's real problem is not so much with Republicans, and everybody knew
party.
Republicans were, but yeah, it's his own party.
Absolutely. I mean, right here in Pennsylvania, you know, Senator Casey here is coming out against the jobs bill.
Yeah, I think the American people are very skeptical of big pieces of legislation. For that reason alone, I think we should break it up. So right away, he's got a problem with it. I mean, I understand that the senator from Alaska may have a problem with the oil and gas provision in which the president wants to make oil and gas companies be treated the same way as other companies. I understand he may have an issue with that, but it's so interesting to me to see that Republicans are able to get Republicans to stand in line and get behind the party. Democrats are unable to do that, and quite frankly, at the moment, they're forming a circular firing squad and absolutely ensuring that they will lose in 2012.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, did you read Carville's piece?
No, I haven't read it yet.
I mean, I think he's absolutely right. I think the president has to go in and clean house and, you know, start indicting people on Wall Street, start doing some things that, you know, would show somewhat of a spine. Because you got to do something, because they are heading right down the drain.
Right down the drain. Now, I mean, I think, you know, with his call that they have to pass this bill, they have to pass it now. I think that's, to some extent, a start, because the polls are showing the public is actually supportive of him, those who know what it's about. More support that idea. It's like 49%, but it's in the 30s that oppose it, and then there's a good number of people who say they don't know what you're talking about, because apparently they don't, you know, watch that TV channel. But I think he has to keep doing that. But when you've got Democrats alone themselves not supporting it, not even all for the same reason, but for disparate and varied and bizarre reasons, it gives the impression of, well, they can't govern themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, you look at this and you go, I don't know that there's a Democrat who could say I'm with the party, because the party doesn't know where the party is.
No.
It's just plain nuts. And I agree with Carville. Start firing people. Start getting people out of the cabinet. Bring in some fresh blood, and, you know, do some big things. Act like a Democrat. Start talking about policy in the way a Democrat would, instead of sending out, what's his name, Emsdorf, the guy they sent out to the super committee the other day to explain the whole economy in very wonky, very academic terms.
Okay, you stop with the wonky explanations. Nobody cares.
Nobody understands them. You got to have bumper stickers.
Right.
We feed people. We make sure you don't live in poverty.
Yeah, it is so astonishing, I think, to many, many, many people who support the Democrats that they are unable to see this.
And, you know,
quite unable to see this.
You know, the president this week, I got to give him credit. You know, he's been out there. He was in Ohio. He's going back to John Boehner's district, I guess, tomorrow. Out there doing what he does best, talking to people. He should have been doing that from the beginning and kept doing it.
Yeah, well, it's, you know,
too late now.
It's too late, and to give him some credit, you know, I'm in the White House to see what he has to deal with. He's got a lot of incoming. You might plan to go out and talk about something, but you get an incoming on national security. You get an incoming on a crisis here and a crisis there. You're tied to your desk.
Yeah, there's a hurricane or a flood or.
Yeah, there's all these other things. You're juggling all these issues all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, averting shutdowns. It looks like we've averted a second FAA shutdown here.
We've averted
short term.
It looks like, unless somebody goes back on their word, but for now. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has cut a deal with Senator No, Tom Coburn, to avoid a second FAA shutdown. This was Senator No, Senator Coburn, deciding that he was going to hold up votes on the short-term extensions, or he was holding up the short-term extensions of the Highway and Federal Aviation Administration Authorization Bill.
Yeah, he hates bike paths.
Doesn't like bike paths, has a couple of other issues. But in this case, what was happening was that his fellow Republicans were going, come on, Tom, please, please don't do it this time. Please, Tom. To no avail.
Yeah, well, you know, he evidently got his, though. And again, you know, it's amazing how one guy has that kind of power.
That's the way the Senate works.
Yeah. So short term, how long? 6 months?
Short term, basically, yes. I'm looking at it here. And the brief story that I've got is not saying, but yes, it's short. Short term is short.
Yeah, I think it was 6 months. And then I guess the agreement down the road is that the bike path will have an opt out for states. And I say, good, you should have opted out this time. You can opt out, and we're just not going to give you the 10%. There's the opt out.
Yeah, if you don't want people riding on bike paths, if you want them riding in the street and getting in the way, then fine.
Yeah, we're just not going to give you the money to do it. That's pretty simple. Makes sense to me. I guess the deficit panel, the big super committee, they had their breakfast meeting.
They had a breakfast together.
Who paid for it?
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I didn't ask, and I don't think anybody else did, but I do get the impression that we're sort of following them like a bromance.
Yeah.
You know,
bromance.
But they had a meeting, and they wouldn't comment on it, and it all seemed to go well, but it was private, and of course, as you know, members of Congress are outraged at the idea of private meetings. They want everything to be in the open, and I think these guys didn't want the triple egg yolk down their ties.
We're treating these people like rock stars. And at the end of the day, I think it's going to, what scares me is it's going to come down to the same petty, ideological differences that are going to keep this apart. And the Republicans will win because of the triggers.
Triggers are very likely to be about to be pulled, and who is going to blink. And I can tell you this, it's not a member of the Tea Party. They don't blink. They don't care.
No, they don't. They're very much a scorched earth ideology. Let's talk about 200 and some thousand jobs probably going to go by the wayside. The post office having trouble.
We've talked about this for a while. I know that you've talked about this, but the post office did announce today that it is going to be cutting back on sorting offices. That's one thing it's going to be doing as a way of cutting back. And so that's definitely jobs. We already know that post offices themselves are on the block. And the other thing it's going to do is first class mail. Ha! You think it might be 1 to 3 days, depending how far it's going. Okay, it's going around the corner. It should be delivered tomorrow. No, that's going to be 2 to 3 days now.
There you go. Well, I mean, I can't wait for the day.
That's the start. That's not the finish.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to starve it down, which is what they've done a nice job of doing, and put some very bizarre mandates on them. This pension thing, to me, kind of bizarre, because no private corporation would ever have to do this. We would never force them to do it. But it's going to be interesting once it goes away and we start paying $8-$10 to deliver a piece of mail. Then we'll see.
Then we'll see indeed. I'm dreading that day. I like the mail.
Yeah, well, I do too. And I think it provides good family sustaining jobs, helps small businesses, helps advertise, helps the economy go once that all goes by the wayside, which is what the right wing wrecking crew wants. It's all downhill from there. Victoria Jones, appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.
All righty, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. And what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Story coming out of Harrisburg again for about the 100th time, and it looks like we're coming down to the nitty-gritty on this. On Tuesday, the Harrisburg City Council once again rejected the mayor's proposal. Her plan was voted down by 4 of the city council members. And the reason behind that, at least publicly, they are saying that they oppose it because it will put too much stress on the city residents, and specifically what they're talking about is a higher earned income tax, and are also complaining that some of the stakeholders aren't paying their fair share under the mayor's proposal. Now, the reaction from those in the power structure that have to deal with this problem was pretty predictable. The Dauphin County Commissioners, they said they were disappointed but not surprised to hear of the Harrisburg City Council decision. The council's action virtually assures area lawmakers will pursue legislation to initiate a state takeover of Harrisburg when the General Assembly recovers at the end of the month. According to Jeffrey Haste, who's the chairman of the county commissioners, this is a quote, "We made a lot of attempts, but they've made it clear they do not want to negotiate in earnest," according to Mr. Haste. Jeff Pakola met with the mayor today. Jeff Pakola was the chief sponsor of a bill which, in fact, would necessitate a state takeover if the council rejects it, which is exactly what they did. He met with the mayor today. They met for better part of an hour in his office. Both of them had put in recommendations included in the state-sponsored Act 47 plan, which council rejected. Again, council's rejection of the mayor's plan, again, virtually assures a state takeover. Last but not least, the governor, and this is key what the governor said, and the governor is the last piece of a rather complex puzzle, and his reaction was this. He said, "I know that the city government," he said, "I know the mayor and the council really didn't create this problem." Now, he said that publicly, although if you analyze it, some of those involved actually were part of the problem, but he said at the end of the day, he said they're going to have to address it. And if they don't, then there's a piece of legislation put on my desk. I will sign it. So it looks like we're coming down to the nitty gritty. And either way it goes, if the state government comes and takes over, it could be hard times unfortunately for the city of Harrisburg. We talked last night, Rick, about how bad it was in this area, and it was. There's literally hundreds of homes that have been decimated. I know in my small town, there's actually, and I live in a small town, about 4,000, there's actually about 20 homes that actually have been condemned. It has been that bad in this area. The state has been sending out some investigators to make sure that there's no scams and price gouging. Agents from the Attorney General's office are doing some spot checks, and they're going door to door in flood affected areas, and they're checking for home repair scams or price gouging. Fines for committing home repair scams are about $1,000 per violation, and $3,000 if a senior citizen is a victim. Fines can be as high as $10,000 for price gouging, defined as increasing the price of a product or service more than 40% above the average price a week before a declared emergency, which I was not aware of. If you know of such a situation where there's price gouging or there's scamming going on, I do have a number here. It's an 800 number, 1-800-441-2555. Let me repeat that, 1-800-441-2555. State low-interest loan program is available. We reported on some cash being available from the feds. There's also money being available from the state, also in the county where I live, and I think there are some counties who are making available. There's some they have some funds available. Not every county does, because some counties are in bad financial shape, but some counties have additional funds. I know in my county there's going to be an application day set aside. For those of you, in fact, who live in Lemon County, if you have some damage, you have up to $500 reimbursement from the county. Go to the municipal building in Lebanon in South 8th Street, and from 8 a.m. to about 4 p.m. on Saturday, they will be filling out applications. The special program from the state, it's devised by the Department of Treasury and Environmental Protection. Homeowners can get loans for 4.99% interest for standardized heating, cooling, windows, doors, insulation, and domestic hot water systems. The rate drops to about 3.99% interest for Energy Star, and advanced performance projects. For whole house improvements or project, the rate is 1.99%. Again, a telephone number if you're interested in the program. You can get some information on this program by dialing 1-877-282-9448. That's 1-877-282-9448. Please, those of you who are questioning in your mind whether you want to apply. You may or may not be covered, but at worst they can tell you that it doesn't cover you. But I would recommend that anybody has any questions on it, apply.
Unless you're a Tea Party person, then stay the hell away from it, because you don't like it anyway. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
Back to America. Rick Smith.
On June 25th, 1938, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law. Viewed as one of the final pieces of legislation of FDR's New Deal and the single most worker-friendly piece of legislation ever written, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was a victory not only for labor unions, but for workers, families, and children across the country. FDR called the new law the most far-reaching, far-sighted program for the benefit of workers ever adopted in this or any other country. This visionary piece of legislation put a ceiling over hours and a floor under wages, mandating a 44-hour work week, a 25-cent minimum wage, and time and a half for overtime. The Fair Labor Standards Act was later amended to 40 hours per week and 40 cents per hour. The law also excluded children from working dangerous jobs and set standard conditions for the employment of child workers to avoid continued exploitation of children. The Fair Labor Standards Act has been changed or amended at least 43 different times. These alterations have been used both to expand worker protections, such as raising the minimum wage, prohibiting age discrimination, and requiring equal pay, and to restrict and take away protections such as the Taft-Hartley Act and the 2004 Fair Pay Amendment. Today, we take the 40-hour work week, minimum wages, overtime, and child labor protections for granted. But up until the passage of the Fair Labor Standard Act, workers were at the mercy of their employers, and children were dying in industrial accidents. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
To the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can go to the website there and download the podcast. Or if you've got one of those smartphones like I've got, download the Stitcher app. Gotta love the Stitcher app. Some good news, I guess, on the short term. The FAA bill has passed on, as we said. But, you know, the thing is it's only for about 6 months. And what I find interesting is, again, you know, Coburn got his little pound of flesh. States will then be able to opt out of the bike paths and the beautification and the walking paths part that was in there because, you know, heaven forbid we promote livable cities where people can walk and ride their bikes. And I would say you can opt out of it, but you don't get the money. You can opt out anytime you want, but you opt out of the money. That would make it just so much easier. I think. Anyway, Atlantic Beach, South Carolina. And you got to wonder who set this bus route up. The school district there announced it was going to be moving a bus stop because someone in the Horry County School District decided a good place for a bus stop would be right behind a strip club. Somehow that they thought, we want our third graders hanging out behind the strip club, and the one woman said, you know, how do I explain to my four-year-old daughter what topless is? And I thought about that for a second. I'm going, you know, when the kid's in the bathtub, he or she's topless. So there you go. That's how you explain it. Ask me, and I will be more than happy to tell you how to explain these things to kids. Funny story in Jacksonville, Florida. A woman says, you know, her neighbor, who has been kind of harassing her a little bit, did some devious stuff and ended up filling her mailbox with about 150 pounds of unsolicited mail, 70 magazine subscription that she said could cost her as much as $1,000. And I'm going, you know, if you really didn't like, I mean, this would take a lot of work, but if you really didn't like someone, you could fill out every magazine subscription that comes, put their name and their address in it, and have it sent to their house. You would really have to hate somebody to do that. It's an awful lot of time, energy, and work. I don't suggest it. Anyway, from Minnesota, another story I found interesting. The city has decided that it is not going to change the name of Stoner Avenue because evidently you get a bunch of stoners who steal the sign. And, you know, I love the article who had to define what the vernacular of stoner is. The vernacular, a stoner is someone who frequently smokes marijuana, unlike the name of the street, who was named after a guy who was alive in the 19th century, a surveyor named Marcus Stoner. So there you go. No, I'm not going to do that one. That's just wrong. Just plain wrong. Well, maybe I should. Should I do the wrong story? Do the wrong story? Do the wrong story. I'm going to do the wrong story. My hometown evidently just can't stay out of the news. Policemen are supposed to protect and serve. And in my hometown, you know, I've had some run-ins, but you don't expect this. On Tuesday, Cuyahoga County Sheriff's Deputy Paul Lawrence was arrested and charged with menacing and public indecency. According to police, a female jogger was passing the vehicle when it suddenly sped off. Then later, she's in the same jogger, you know, saw the Jeep parked next to her automobile. And I love, this is right from the article, I can't make this up, from the people over at RT. She said she saw the man driving stick, but going nowhere. I can't make that up. He was driving stick, he was shifting gears, but he wasn't going anywhere. So she, you know, came up and saw him, you know. I guess he had a date that day. And as they put in, and I can't make this up, this is what they wrote. He called off work for a hot date with no one other than Rosie Palmer and her five sisters. Evidently, Mr. Palmer, or Officer Palmer, was pleasuring himself while the woman jogged by. And he has been busted again. And I go, you know, I get it, you know, maybe once you get caught, you learn your lesson, but twice? And as a cop, exactly what part of this don't you get? You're supposed to protect and serve, not flash and annoy. I don't know.
You just had to do it, did you?
Yeah, come on. Again?
What is it about your city, Rick?
I don't know.
What is it about the policemen out there?
I don't know. And, you know, again, you know, here's the thing. If that's what you do, then, you know, I know everyone does it. Not in the parking lot, not near a golf course, not near a jogging track. This is the kind of stuff that ends you up on a list, and not a good list. Because now this guy is, you know, it's one of these things. There was a picture with, it was a stock photo. And I go, I sure hope that, you know, nobody ever recognizes that stock photo because they'll think that's the guy. Hey, that's the guy who was driving a stick but not going anywhere. Which I thought was a great way of putting that.
Well, that's a good nickname for the rest of his life.
Sticky?
Stick. There you go.
Well, I'll just call him Sticky. Well,
wow.
Well, good for you, officer. Good luck in prison. I'm sure you'll have lots of company and lots of practice. Well, not granted it won't be your own, but there you go anyway. So anyway, here in Philadelphia, North Philadelphia, the First Castle Doctrine defense will be popping up. Evidently, you had an argument with somebody. Somebody pushes you and you shoot them. That's the Castle Doctrine. A spokesman for Mike Turzai's office said the 60-day waiting period was firm. Acknowledged that lawyers could use the defense, but probably not going to be able to be used because it wasn't up to the date. But still, good luck on that. Let me know how it works on you. Last story I have for the day, and this is one of those where you go, really, you had to study this. There had to be a poll. There had to be somebody who does this. There was a survey done over in Britain, and the headline reads, and it's pretty simple, larger women more apt to have sex on first date. And it's true. I mean, it's probably true that, you know, because one reason or another, bigger girls are, you know, I don't know, whatever. But what I found interesting is they went through this whole big thing about the attributes in women that predict sex on the first date, that they're medium drinkers, that they have an interest in cars, that they spend time in bars, that they're a little bit bigger, you know, kind of those things. And the one, you know, the things that, you know, kind of don't predict that women will have sex on the first date, you know, they don't drink and they have an interest in bicycling and they're generally a lot more intelligent. What I found really funny, though, was when they went to the male side, what attributes in men predicted that they would have sex on the first date? Breathing. There's the answer. Breathing. Have a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the blood of sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.